we made it quite clear, and members of the committee did advance questions and did inquire as to what our position was about the reported intent of the Commonwealth Games Federation to withdraw these rights. And we were quite emphatic then, as we are even now, and we still feel very strongly about this issue, that it's one thing to commit an error once, but to repeat the same mistake twice is unforgivable. So more so we who work in the public service and are entrusted with the responsibility of looking after the public purse, it becomes quite important for us to become as prudent as it can be in what we do. So consequently, we are as confident as we were back then that Durban is ready as a host, and that the amount of money our government has availed is sufficient to host these games, and we can demonstrate that. And that the budget our treasury and ourselves had agreed to and had put forward is actually sufficient to deliver quality games and to deliver this. But we are quite confident that we aren't the department we were some 6-7 years ago. We are now a much more robust machine than we were back then. And we are fully aware that we have learned a lot out of hosting the FIFA World Cup. And we know with greater certainty the things we as a government must agree to do and the things we must not agree to do. And we are also quite clear that we should not be allowed to be bullied by international organizations on any other matter, not just in sport, but in any other matter, and that the sovereignty of the Republic and the ability of its government to make independent decisions in the interest of the Republic is what is paramount. And I think within that background and context, I would wish to brief the committee and on behalf of the minister and to clarify how we arrived. I know that before I had done so, but I think it's important that we do so again, and we also highlight the key issues that have been reported widely in the media and what the CGF has issued in its press releases as to their rationale and the reasoning why they say they have taken the rights away. And therefore, to any story, there's two sides. There's not one side, and it is unfortunate that those who wish to report on this matter and who wish to ventilate on the issues only take the story of what they are told by the CGF, and somehow they seem to ignore what we say. And I think what we say is essential, because it has to be looked also from that balanced view, and one needs to listen to both sides in order to formulate an opinion about the issue. So, Chair, I'm not going to bore you with the milestones, because the committee is fully aware about these milestones and where we have come from, and this deadline and timeline is essential. But I think that importantly, what is important about this is that it's on the issue of the budget, because there seem to be those who propound a myth that say South Africa committed itself to a budget of 8.5 billion and then wanted to backtrack to a budget of 4.32 billion. That's not true. And I think the timeline will say that quite clear and indicate, because even as we speak, there has never been any commitment of 8.5 billion and there has not been any commitment of money, because commitments are not made by word of mouth. They are made in writing, and contracts are signed around those issues. And as I can assure you, Chair, with me here is the copies of the host city contract, which is a binding agreement that is supposed to help us determine whether a commitment was made or not. But this contract is only valid not when it is signed only by the CGF, but the contract is valid when it is signed by both parties. Now, you you can explore as the accounting officer responsible for signing on behalf of the Republic once the finance minister has given a guarantee. That, Chair, that's where my name is written. And as you can see, there's no signature there. And even if you see on this side, all the CGF people have signed, but we have not signed. And that goes for the rest of the same agreement, basically it's three copies, but we have never signed this agreement because we didn't agree with its contents. And we have made it quite clear. So frankly, it is not our problem that the CGF went ahead because of their own time pressures to award us the rights even before we agree to the terms and conditions. It's not our problem, honestly. And in fact, South Africans have got to be very proud and happy about that situation and not chastise us for it, because we were quite frank and clear from the onset that any contract will have to be negotiated. We can't sign the contract first and then only negotiate it after. It doesn't work like that. And if the contract already speaks to the issue of revenue and says that ticketing and this and that, all of it is due to the CGF, we the Republic must pay, and somebody must take all the money that is being generated and use it for their own purpose. And we are obligated only to foot the bill. And we have really no control about the things that we can do or not do. Who makes an investment and does not want to safeguard that investment? So I think these key issues have got to be put into context. And it is for that reason that we did not sign the whole city contract. But if I may share with you, in bidding and hosting, typically what happens is that these people commit you first, like what FIFA did, makes us commit first and we sign, and only then they then say we award you the rights, but they already have the agreement. Typically this is what happens, but our government had no appetite to enter into any such arrangement. We were quite clear from the onset, even as Durban was bidding, to say we would want to negotiate the whole city contract, and we want to make it in such a manner that it is favorable to us, the country, that is. And it also did not make sense to us why we need to pay a hosting fee of 1.5 million British pounds on an annual basis until the games are held. Because supposedly, if you are paying for such a hosting fee, you are in fact asking that you are buying rights. That's what you are actually doing. But why is it that you have paid this hosting fee and yet not all the revenue is certain that it will be yours? Something doesn't add up there. So we did not agree with that. We were quite clear that if that's the case, we are paying 1.5 million British pounds a year. All the revenue to be accrued during the games must be accruable to our national fiscus. And we were quite clear about that arrangement. Now, be it as it may, we found ourselves where we were awarded the rights, having not signed the whole city contract, and we were clear that we would need to negotiate that. So this is another issue that we need to also clarify, because it was then said that we wanted to negotiate in bad faith. But in truth, we negotiated in good faith. Consistently, this committee asked us questions, and we responded, because with you, we cannot but respond, because we are accountable to this August House. But we had never issued media statements, never. We had never sought to negotiate with the CGF via the media, and consistently a whole host of journalists and titles have sent us questions and what, and we were very consistent in our response to say we are in the course of negotiations with the CGF and we do not intend to negotiate in bad faith. But there by London, statements kept on being issued that we have not met this deadline, we have not done that, we have not constituted the LOC, that there's this, that we have been given 180 days to commit to certain things, and we have not done that, we have not done that. Yes, of course, we couldn't do all of that, and there is a rationale for it. And which brings me, Chair, to the issues that were raised. First one is the issue of the financial guarantee. Now, clearly CGF, after having sent its evaluation team, they sent an evaluation team here to South Africa to come look at what we said we can deliver. They sent a number of missions, actually. Just to recapture for you, they sent us in April, May, an evaluation commission, which came to look with event specialists that were to look at our proposals of how we intend to deliver the games. They also sent us affiliate members of the CGF to come see and look at South Africa's value proposition. And we were ready with the security assessments by July. And so, which means that by July 2015, long before the determination of awarding the rights, we had done everything, because if they were not happy, and if the affiliate members who vote were not happy, they should not have voted for Durban later in September 2015. Then they should not have said Durban has presented a superior bid and is able to do the job. Because we were clear we were able to do the job. But as you know, the budgets that we were told that they were revised upwards to 8.5 billion. And we were told that the finance guarantee must be on the basis of what the technical evaluation reports say. But we differ with that, because we were clear, our country was quite clear that it will only issue a guarantee, and issue a guarantee of 4.32 billion rands. Because that's what we believed was sufficient to deliver the games. And we had our own delivery methodology of these games that doesn't really, to be fair to the CGF, it is not typically how they deliver the games. They have just delivered Glasgow, you know, in broke even. They are delivering Gold Coast. It has already made a profit even before the games hit. So they have their own specific way of delivering these games. But those ways must also be workable for us, South Africans. Can't work only for CGF. It must also work for the country. And the reason we say that, I'll give you an example. They say that you must build the athletes' village within a 5-kilometer radius. 5-kilometer radius of where the main stadium is. And we say no. The Moses Mabhida Stadium, where it is, we have two sites, Windsor Park, and we also have Hoy Park. These are the only two sites possibly where we can build an athletes village. But we know that our future expansion does not allow us to build housing there. So we need houses, but we already have a program approved by cabinet in one of the presidential infrastructure strategic projects, actually SIP number 18. We are building a new city, Konobia, south of Kinshasa Airport. And money has been allocated. So whether the games are held or not held, those houses will be built. And indeed, even now, they will be built. The houses will go on, and they will be built. But that's where we need housing. But this is about 28 kilometers away from Moses Mabhida. So during the technical committee's evaluation when they visited Durban, we took them by bus to this site where we intend to build the houses, and we showed them that when they are escorted by Metro Police, it actually takes 15 minutes from that site, straight on the highway, to get to Moses Mabhida. And they were there in 15 minutes. They were impressed. You must see the marks they gave us on that, quite high. Contrary to the belief that says we submitted an inferior bid, it was quite high. But then we knew it is sustainable because those houses will be able to house soldiers and people in the gap housing market after. Now, we can't be forced to build a village in an area where we don't want it. And let me tell you the other thing. The typical methodology is to establish an LOC, a private company run by the CGA, in our case being SASCOC, and the CGF as the international body to which the CGA affiliates to. And they run that LOC. Our job is to transfer money to this LOC. And this LOC procures and does everything, even services that government can essentially deliver. And we do not agree with that arrangement. We were clear that the houses will be built by the Department of Human Settlements. And they'll be built to the specifications of the CGF, though. So it is not your typical RDP house. These houses will have, unlike the others, the RDPs, they will have built-in cabinets, they'll have everything that is essential for an athlete coming to these games to live in. But when they are done, they are given to the gap housing. Now, we were not prepared to take lump sums of money of government and put them there and just give it to a private company to run as it sees to finish when we know human settlements can actually do the job and do it well. So secondly, we were also not convinced, particularly on the issue of the finance guarantee. We were told that they want an open-ended shortfall guarantee. They call it a shortfall guarantee. In essence, they are saying that this LOC run by them, it does procurement, does delivery for the games, but should it run into financial problems and not have sufficient money, then government must underwrite whatever potential liability this entity will have. Now, it's tantamount to giving a state blank check to say somebody can spend and even spend as they please and recklessly, and you must come and cover the shortfall. And it has happened. During the FIFA 2010 World Cup, our closeout report is quite clear. It shows that there were cost overruns. All of you, I'm sure, honorable members, are fully aware about this scenario of the cost overruns. Some of them ran into billions, whether on the building of stadia or even in the operational expenses of the LOC. But this is not fair to any country that a private entity spends money, and in spending its money, it can spend recklessly or go beyond the budget, and that there is an insistence that whatever the shortfall it is, you give us the guarantee that you'll cover that shortfall. That's not proper sound fiscal discipline, if you agree with us, because we had to insist, and we gave them a cap. We said to them, right, it is possible. There may be a drought, or there may be disaster, there may be this, there may be that. But the international norm, for those who budget, they know that we budget between 12 to 18%. And we took it to the highest of that international norm, to full 18%, and we said we will guarantee a shortfall, a contingency of 18% on the approved operational budget. And this operational budget, as approved by ourselves, the country expected to deliver the games, not as approved by an international body that says, give us 8.5 billion and stand there and watch us deliver this thing on your behalf, and then we say South Africa has hosted. In essence, it's not South Africa hosting, it's the CGF running the games with our money in our country. This is as it is, but if we are to be a true host country, then we must make decisions about what works for us and what doesn't work for us. And I think that was the first thing. On the issue of the games governance, we insisted that therefore if we were to make a 4 billion investment, we want to have a say on the board. And we want to have the board of this LOC to have half the members being government people and half the others being sport. So there is a fair balance and we can oversee our interest. Every company, everywhere in accounting, where you are an investor, you have a say on the board. You sit there, you become a director, or you have representation, or you are represented by a proxy or otherwise, but essentially the principle is the same. So why is it when it is insisted by government that this thing is seen as a problem, when we insist that the Republic must have representation on the board. We are not saying we want to deliver the games ourselves. The board will hire the CEO, the CEO will hire the staff who deliver the games, but they must be accountable to the board, and we must oversee how the money and the public purse is being utilized. In fact, this is a requirement. It's Section 38 of the PFMA. It says any accounting officer that transfers money to an entity must put in place measures to make sure that the money first is used for the right purpose, is used properly, and can be accounted for, and that those he's transferring to have put proper controls mechanisms in place to utilize the money effectively. So there is nothing untoward about that specific thing. The issue of the Games Village, I've spoken about it, and so is the issue of the LOC. So those who say that we had attempted to run the games ourselves, I don't think there is holistic truthfulness in that, because we only insisted that we want to sit on the board. And this was not seen, and it was not palatable to those who were making this proposition. The other key issue was the days and the duration of the game. We were of the opinion, quite frankly, that the games must start on the 18th of July, being the birthday of Nelson Mandela, and to honor him and to celebrate that. And they had the thing that says, no, their games normally start on the 10th of July. So such a small issue, we could not agree on it, that they want their program to start on the 10th, we want ours to start on the 18th, and there was a lot of wrangling around this issue, whether when do we start and when is the opening ceremony. But we understood the significance for our country and why we are hosting these games, social cohesion and nation building being one of our pillars which we set, and the idea, you can even see our logo for this was Ready to Inspire. So with it, it defeated the whole purpose if we could not agree even about when to start, So, and also the duration of the game. We were clear that with the number of facilities we have, we can run a tight 2-week program. And we're not interested in running a 3-week program, because the longer you run, the more days you have, and the more, volunteers have got to eat, people have got the Athletes Village must be serviced. All your costs just rack up. So, and we were clear that if we run a congested 2-week program, we can deliver the games fairly well. Obviously, for purposes of adverts and other revenue that CGF may want to make more money from, clearly we are reducing on that potential revenue flow if we run a congested program. But it was in the best interest of our fiscals that we run a congested program. And so within that context, that's why, Chair, we could not agree about the dates as well as the duration of the games. Then there is an issue where we're told that therefore our bid was, because of all this above, our bid was no longer compliant. We don't comply with what we say. And we were clear. We negotiated. We were asked that we must prove that we can deliver these games for 4.32 billion. Now, Chair, which brings me to that specific issue, because this has been the biggest contention. Is the money enough? Because we argue the money is enough, the CGF say it is not enough. We are convinced it is enough, and I'll tell you why we are this convinced that the money is enough. In 1999, using the same delivery methodology we wanted to build, our country hosted the first multi-coded sport event. And this was the All Africa Games hosted by Johannesburg. And if you can remember, we used Ellis Park as well as the adjacent Johannesburg Athletic Stadium at the same time. And we also used the courts, indoor courts, as well as the surrounding courts of Ellis Park precinct. And we hosted good games. We didn't have a lot of infrastructure to improve upon and so on. And if I tell you now, that budget of the All Africa Games, and the reason we peg the CGF's 2022 games with this is that the two games are fairly comparable, and don't be lied to. Whether an athlete comes from Europe or comes from Africa, the costs are fairly the same. That's the truth. What they eat must be fair, same, nutritious meal. They must sleep same type of bed, every other thing we provide must fairly be the same. So the costs are comparable. And so those who say you can't compare all Africa Games with the Commonwealth Games. That's a fallacy. You actually can, and you should compare them. So the countries involved, all Africa Games then, back then in 1999, 53 countries. Commonwealth Games in 2022 were anticipating so-called 71 countries and territories. And the reason we call it that way, we say countries and territories, is primarily because, like, when we go to the Olympics, UK comes as UK, and they have one team. But when they come to the Commonwealth Games, all of a sudden, they are no longer UK. You have England athletes, you have Ireland athletes, you have Welsh athletes, you now have Scotland athletes. And they come like that, each of them bearing their own flag and their teams much differently. And even if you go to the Polymicronesia Islands, all those small islands that make up like one, like Indonesia comes as seven islands, all of a sudden, you know. There's athletes from Java, all this, you understand. So that's why. But strictly speaking, if we were to count them as countries, you will quickly see that we're only talking 54, not 71. So 53, 54, they are comparable, same countries. Number of athletes, well, Africa Games back then, 4,200 athletes. Right now, Commonwealth Games 2022, about 4,500 athletes. Comparable. Officials, about 1,800 back in 1999. We're anticipating about 2,000 technical officials in the Commonwealth Games. Duration, All Africa Games, 10 days. This one is per our congested program, 14 days. So they are comparable by far. But what is important, Chair, is that back then, our budget, our operational budget for the 1999 Commonwealth Games was only 453 million rands. If we compound that figure at 6%, we know that our, by the way, our growth has not been 6% all the years right through the, there's years we have grown even at a mere 1.3%. But let's be fair to everybody. Let's compound that figure at 6% year-on-year growth. By 2022, we'll only be at 808 million. Nowhere near even a billion. At 808. So you can imagine that at 4.3 billion rands for comparable games, hey, we should deliver very good games if we do exactly as we did back then in 1999. And we have proven we have a methodology that works and that can deliver effectively. Honestly, you can deliver these games as a, you know, a Toyota Taz perhaps, or you can deliver them as a Rolls Royce as we've been required by 8.5 billion. But if you ask me, at 4.2, it's a BMW, it's a fair ride, it's good. We can do a good job and something that the country can be proud about. So we were not really proposing a Taz. We were really proposing a BMW, if you can think about it. So, but it appears our BMW was not in the league of what is expected, the Bentley or the Rolls Royce. So our country has no choice. It cannot deliver a Bentley or a Rolls Royce in such a constrained economic environment. And those who say, why did we bid when we knew we did not have money? However, we had the money, and we still have the 4.3 billion. If tomorrow we were told that deliver the games, we will. And we'll deliver them fairly well. So it is in the question. And it's not like we lied to somebody and said we will raise all the money you say you want. And therefore, somehow, somewhere we somersaulted now, you know, and then decide, no. Those who say we have somersaulted must give you an agreement, the whole city contract we have signed that says we're going to pay that money. That we said ourselves and we signed and we said. Even our Minister of Finance, the guarantee he has given is signed, is clear, it's 4.32 billion. There's nowhere 8.5. That figure is not there in our vocabulary of government, and it has never been there. And I think it is unfortunate that there will be those who want to propound a myth that says South Africa committed to this thing. The only way for us to commit, we are a government, we don't commit in some corners or some word of mouth or whatever. We commit by agreements and we sign contracts to that effect. And legally speaking, The only person who has the power to give such a written commitment is the finance minister, using section 46 of the PFMA. It's the only one who has the power to do so, and the only person empowered to do so has written his guarantee, and his guarantee was 4.32 billion, not 8.5. So I think that issue needed to be clarified, Chair. And on that basis, they had then decided that no, they don't accept what we say. And they had decided that therefore they would take the rights away. But in the last meeting, I was here to brief the committee on this issue, and when it was raised, I was emphatic, and the committee agreed with us that that's the best route to follow. That honestly, if we can't find each other on the budget, we aren't prepared to go 8.5. We are really going to say to them, take your rights and take these gains and go have them somewhere. But we're not going to do that. We're not going to do it at all costs, and we're not going to host at all costs and want to break the bank simply just to prove that. We have a proven track record, and that's why we were given this right in the first place. We were not made a favor. No. For those who believe we're made a favor, it is not true. We're not made a favor. Technical experts of the CGF came here. They inspected our stadia, looked at everything we're saying, and so on. The only thing they were grossly unhappy about was the delivery methodology we wanted to deliver these games on, and also the amount of money we were putting up. If we had put 8.5 billion, I'm sure they would be smiling all the way, and everybody would be more than happy. And they would want us to stand by the side and watch. We are not about to do that, because we know what happened with the 2010 World Cup. Those cost overruns did come. That guarantee was cashed on. It's not like it's something amiss, you know. It happens almost all. Greece today, as we speak, they are in the financial morass they are in because of the Olympic Games they hosted, and they were made to do things that they didn't require. If I show you the pictures of some of the swimming pools and some of the facilities that are dilapidated now, which were built specifically for those Olympics, and they were never used for any other thing thereafter. The things that they did with Brazil, they don't know what to do with some of the facilities now. So we're not going to do that. I can assure you, Chair, that we will not do it, not in this current ministry and administration, that we would try to do something like that. And so I think that's what is unfortunate. And that's why we were quite clear, and our minister was frank to say, indeed, let's not beat about the bush. If the CGF say we have committed 8.5 billion to them, they must take us to the Court of Arbitration of Sport in Switzerland and enforce that agreement. We are quite clear about it. And we know they would have taken us there long ago if indeed we had made that commitment. We have never made that commitment. Let me repeat again, Chair, and at that point. Thank you.
Honourable members, of course, the point is in our agenda. That's why I was just allowing the DG to do his duty to brief us, because he's part of this. Any questions from DG, whilst we're still maintaining that, if we still want Minister to come, we'll give Minister his chance. But thank you for the briefing, DG. Honorable Bergman, Honorable Mhlongo, Honorable Muse, Honorable Manana, Honorable De Wimp. And that's all.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure whether we'd be better off with the Minister here or not, but I must say that, you know, DG has been in the same position when we announced the fact that we were bidding, or that we had bid, or that we were receiving the Commonwealth. Almost the concerns that we raised are the concerns that the DG is raising, as if this is what South Africa was concerned about the whole time, when in fact it was us that raised these concerns in the beginning, and I think either the DG and the minister were caught up in the excitement that they failed to acknowledge that these were some of the issues that were going to come back and bite us. But it's almost a script that's taking place in South Africa at the moment. It happens in international relations, it's happening in sports, it's happening in trade and industry. Let's blame the foreign agents. let's blame everyone else and let's accept the accountability. And then whatever they do, they can take us to courts overseas, they can take us here and there. We can just resign from that court. We learned our lesson last time. But these are the kind of narratives that just take place as if we all meant to just accept that. You know, we must just go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, this is the problem. But in the same instance, why do we bid for something? Why do we spend money on a bid if we don't even know the terms and conditions? The DG says we must negotiate the terms. He says, who signs a contract before negotiating the terms? Who bids for the Commonwealth Games with the extreme costs that they have without knowing the terms and conditions before? I warned everyone while we were all busy celebrating. I said, these are the kind of pitfalls. Do we have the money? Can we start, can we start building, improving and building on the stadiums when we've already had the World Cup? We've already got some of these stadiums that are already, in some instances, white elephants. Now, I've asked every single question that is pretty much being answered today, but it seems that I've got different answers to the answers that are coming forward. And in fact, I might just have a situation here where I bring all those questions through here, and we just look from the start to the finish. As I said yesterday, sports tourism is important. We in South Africa need to focus on what is sports tourism. Sports tourism is not bringing a legacy of something like the World Cup or the Olympics or the Commonwealth to make a minister famous. It's about what can we do to build our country. What can we do to bring our sports tourism often does not involve the sportsman. The benefit does not involve the sportsman. That's a certain part of the pie. The actual part of sports tourism is what it does for the country, what it does for unity, what it does for building a country, what it does for job creation, what it does for introducing the world to something like South Africa in a positive aspect and not always on CNN or BBC. Now, no one told us about this 1.5 million rand pound annual rights tax. To worry about the growth, I wouldn't worry about the growth, I'd worry about the destabilization between the rand and the pound. To me, that would be a bigger cost. It's the first time that we're hearing about not signing the agreement. You know, from what I understood, that we had signed the agreements, we were already there, and please, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the way I understood it. It was pretty much a fait accompli. We had got the Commonwealth, we were celebrating, Mark Alexander was there was celebrations all around. And now we're told that no, but we didn't even sign the contract. Now, if there's a miscommunication in that, again, this is either negligent or it's important information that I think has been withheld from this committee. And again, I ask, maybe it hasn't been withheld, but from my recollection of everything, it was a fait accompli. The whole time that I kept on asking the minister about the Commonwealth, he kept on saying, no, everything's on track, we're fine, we're still going to get the, you know, we've almost had all the criteria checked, all the tick boxes checked, and it was only on this last one where the faltering answers started becoming more apparent. But now, what I believe, and even based on this presentation more firmly, is that transformation is important to us in sports. Maybe transformation should happen more in the minister's office. Instead of the minister tweeting, getting his spokespeople to tweet on racism and division and dividing us, maybe what we should do in the sports ministry is transform it to become actually sports focused and focused on building people within sports, building a nation, building sports tourism, building opportunities, building competition, but most importantly, is unity, is bringing much needed unity to this country. And sports is the one that can do it. As we always quote Tata Madiba, sports, this is the committee that will bring that unity.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I wanted to find out, but I welcome the sanitized presentation. It has been clean, this presentation. You've made sure that you clean it before you presented to us. Why I'm saying that you can go to
Honorable Mhlongo.
does that mean? Sanitized. Into cleaning way, into exorcism, everything of Negi, the equivalent.
Were you here when the presentation, the same presentation was presented?
I don't think you are allowed to intimidate me if you don't
know. No,
understand.
I'm not intimidating.
Yeah, give me a chance and then I'll explain myself. Be patient. Don't interject while I'm asking.
No, I do have that right. Because we had the same presentation. So I'm cautioning you when you're saying it's a clean presentation.
Yeah, let me advise you. Go to the website.
No.
Now, this is not there. I'm saying it's a clean presentation.
Which website?
Okay. Go to www. Maybe it's...
Okay. Continue, Honorable.
You're listening to the DG, that now must continue. Chair, it's uncalled for you.
No.
You know, it's a violation of power, Chair. But now because he told you that, yes, there's a presentation on the website. Now he's saying I must continue. That's why I'm saying, Chair, don't intimidate me. When I'm saying it's a clean, it's my view. I'm saying it's a clean presentation. It's a sanitized presentation. I wouldn't withdraw to that.
I didn't say withdraw. But I wanted to get you. Okay, I'm chairing the meeting in order that when I'm doing follow-up questions, I must have a clear sense what does that mean about your sentence. I wanted to get you correctly saying that it is a clean censored presentation. I wanted to know what is that.
Do you understand?
So I've got a right to ask also to be in the chairperson.
Yeah. But Chair, I think one of the things that you must do, I think you did not present this.
No.
Please
give Honorable Mhlongo a chance. I'll give you a chance. Don't raise your hands until he clarifies himself, and then I'll give you a chance to say what you want to say.
Yeah. Chair, I'm saying I saw that question unfairly, because when I say clean, I think he must ask me, why are you saying clean presentation? Now you're asking me, but clean is sanitizing. It's like... there's actual presentation, and you take what fits for you to present it on the day. So
but
I'm saying.
Honorable Mhlongo, I also have a right to ask, what do you mean when you say it's a clean presentation? Because I didn't understand what you are saying. I need to understand each and everyone who's talking in the committee in order that I must get fact. So I do have that right also as a chairperson.
Do you understand, Chair, that what is a clean, sanitized presentation?
But we have clarify what do you mean. It's a point of order.
Chairperson, I'm raising this. To me, it sounds like it's a Honorable Mhlongo, it's undermining the chair. Because he can't keep on repeating the chairperson and say, are you sure do you understand? Do you understand this presentation was not, it's not presented by you? Because if maybe you are giving, asking the Honorable Mhlongo that you want the understanding of, which means you wanted the clarity on him, but he keep on saying, do you understand this and that? I think I'm not defending anyone, but the thing is, to me, it sounds like he's undermining you.
Point taken, Honorable Mamanan. What is your objection?
No, I agree.
Yes,
that's
what I was saying. That Honorable members, when I wanted a clarification from Honorable Mhlongo felt offended about what I was asking. And I'm still maintaining that I was right to ask, what does that mean? So he elaborated and cautioned me, and I can't not ask questions also as a chairperson. So I've said to honorable members, they will be getting their chance to contribute. So I was having a right to ask, what do you mean when you are saying that? And even the DG, I didn't give him a chance to respond. He's just jumped saying that he will be responding. You must be aware that Honorable Mhlongo, when you're accusing me saying that now I do understand when DG is saying going to clarify. I didn't seek clarification from DG. I was seeking clarification from you. That's why I said continue, because you were still clarifying, but also accusing me of what you are saying. Go on, and you must know that I will ask questions in between if I don't understand. What are you saying?
You have a right to ask, but do you understand when I'm saying this presentation is sanitized? And it's not a question that I'm undermining you. I'm asking you that because I don't want to see myself repeating myself.
I've said continue because you responded to me and I will respond when my time is coming. I wanted to get what are you meaning about that, and then you clarified and you even accused me of that I'm intimidating you. I wanted clarification. It's not an intimidation when somebody, even if I'm not a chairperson, to ask what do you mean when you're saying so. Please continue with your contribution.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to find out, you know, you're saying you went all out to say we are hosting. It's in paper. But now you did not sign the agreement. Can you explain that in a layman understanding? How can you say we are hosting, but you did not sign the agreement? And can we have a copy of that agreement? Please? I wanted to find, can we have even a copy of the agreement or the guarantee from the finance minister of 4.3 billion? And in your papers or in that agreement, there's no single line that states 8.5 billion.
DG? No. Okay, no.
I wanted...
You must say so to me. There's no way that you must ask direct to himself. Even you, Honorable, we are presenting to the committee through me, not only to DG, because we all have interest of each and every contribution in order that our engagement must be a committee engagement. Any presentation, we must have an understanding. Let not DG and Honorable Mhlongo interact in between.
Absolutely.
DG, please wait for your time, and if you want a clarification, say it to me in order that the order of the day must be ordered.
I apologize, Chair. Through you, Chair. I'm asking the question through you. I apologize. Why did we say, why did the minister went all out to say we are hosting 2022 Commonwealth Games, but we did not sign the agreement? That was my first question I wanted to find out. And, you know, this thing of, well, maybe I want to declare when I'm saying it's a sanitized presentation. I went to the website. I've never seen on the website that they must have LOC, private company, so to say. And in my mind, in going to the documentation exactly, Sascock, what is the issue now to run with this? Now, you spoke of 50-50 politician, if I catch well, maybe, but it's 50-50, said politicians and Sascock, if I capture it well, or 50-50. Can you explain that 50-50 part as the hosting? And I wanted to find out, Chair, my colleague responded to it. What is this 1.5 per annum? You spoke of pounds. Come to rents that it was on the agreement which you did not see it fit to support that before the 2022 actual games. Chair, can you even explain the maybe? You're saying you're going to support it if there was a cap of 18%, which you supported as an operational budget. Can you give us in figures the actual of 18% that you are calculating from the actual? And can you explain what is open-ended agreement? And I believe that it's both sides, because now the CGC, CGF, they're not here, and you're saying you guys went to the site and they wanted you to build a house somewhere not where you wanted to build. And I'm saying, for an example, Chair, I wanted to find out the location. I'm not sure, I didn't hear you clearly. You're saying it took you 15 minutes when you used Metro Police, or when you are supported by them, it took you 15 minutes to go to the actual site. How long does it take you on a normal day-to-day run when you're driving from the stadium to the village, the allocated village? One of the things why, Chair, this thing is so emotional, the minister, even when assisted by the official, he did not even respond to our questions, written questions. We wrote written questions to the minister, and the minister went all out to say, I'm still sourcing information. When were you aware of this information that you have given to us? Because the minister went all out to say, no, I have a written question. The response says, I'm still sourcing information, and especially to a Etegwini municipality. That was specifically that the minister was not aware of it. Why? What is the cause? Is this information sourced after my question, which I wrote in January, because we knew already that we're not going to host? Now, in November, Chair, I wanted to find out, did SASCO inform the minister that in November 2016 that we cannot host this event? It's a question, just a layman question. In your document, I have two figures. I wanted to return them. In your document, 8.2 billion, was it affordable or not? Because you're talking of, it's an open-ended agreement, which is the cost interest before the game, as you explained. Sorry, Chair. It's always closing. I apologize because... Did the department consider all financial implications, all, before bidding? And last question, can maybe explain 1.8 million which was used? 118 million which was used, sorry, not 118 million which was used out of the budget of 200 million, and which is, the minister went out to say, it's not a loss, we've budgeted 200 million, we've only used 118 million. Now, can you explain that financial implication too on that? Thank you, Chair, for now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, colleagues. Chairperson, I was just checking here, the 8.5 billion from that was proposed by the CGF. To me, with my own view, it was too much compared to what the department or the government was having budgeted for, which is the 4.3 billion. When I analyze, I'll use my analysis, because when I look at the contender, the bidder, which is what was the Canadian City to withdraw its bid to host the Commonwealth Games 2022, I think that was the reason they withdrew. Maybe they had it somewhere, somehow, that this CGF will need so much. That's why they started not to bid on this event. So maybe it's their reason. I'm also asking myself, because SASCOC is a sporting body, what was they say when they lose this Commonwealth Games. And the other issue of the agreement that was not signed, I agree with that, but really when I look at it, why it was not signed is that the LOC, they were supposed to have the chief of the mission, the manager of the games, all those people, all those LOC, they were not even yet finalized. DG, that was the reason of the LOC was not formed, because all those people were not even prepared yet. So another thing, Chairperson, I don't want to be long because of my time. Chairperson, I'm pleading to you that this committee has got their own entities whom they always come and account here. Like myself, as I'm serving in this committee, media is not accounting to me. That is why I'm not going to take anything from media. The entities must always come here so that I can hear each and every word, or any question that I'm posing to my entities, they must give me an answer. And another thing, I'm looking at the Conubia. Conubia is kilometers away from Moses Mabhida. If maybe they were having identified Conubia that it's going to be the village for the participants, really it was going to take time for the participants to go back to the exact venue for their games. Do they think it was a good village for Conubia to be utilized as an accommodation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, no. Firstly, Chairperson, without necessarily answering Honorable Mhlongo directly, that why did we say we were hosting? I think it simply says that we were hosting because we had won the bid. That's where it starts. But I think the DG would further explain that because there are so many underlying issues that goes along with that. But Jefferson, we again agree without necessarily having to answer to what Bergman is saying, that we all agree of all the goodies that goes along with, you know, sports tourism. But we also equally agree of the disadvantages that would go along with losing the right to host Jefferson. And it would be narrow of us to think that, you know, losing the ride did not have, you know, a financial bearing to this country. There were costs that were involved, and we lost, we incurred those costs because we knew that we were hosting Chairperson. But Chairperson, I want to commend the department for having taken, you know, the stance that they were not going to accede to the bullying tactics of these international bodies. I was here, Chairperson, when FIFA hosted the World Cup. I was part of this committee. I know what is meant by, you know, what the DG has just alluded to. And I'm glad that we took that stance, and I really want to commend them. I don't see anything wrong, Chairperson, with having to take that stance that, look, we are a country as well, and our sovereignty should be respected. You know, we know that these international bodies, once they come to your country, they don't recognize you as a country, as South Africa. We have seen that with FIFA. They control everything. They would even tell you that in your country or in your conferences where to sit as a sport committee. They tell you that, look, you cannot sit there this is where we are. We control everything, including you, including your country. And I think I would like to commend you, Chairperson, the department, for having taken that and having not acceded to those too much demands of the CGF. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Rafa.
No, Chair, I'll start by clarifying what has happened in this committee, so that it is clear for everyone. We have had several presentations from the department on this matter. And throughout those presentations, it was clear that they'll only sign once they are satisfied that they are not going to be controlled from somewhere else, so that the revenue, they should be in a position to can be satisfied that they'll be in control of the revenue accrued from the hosting. The other clarity that I want to make is that countries bid because if you win, the chances of increasing sport tourism becomes much, much, much better than if you don't bid. And once you have won the right to bid, you are guaranteed of more tourists coming and you making more revenue as the country. Now, I don't understand that some of our members here, are they saying we must ban federations from bidding henceforth? The very same members, when the minister banned five federations, that is stopping them, is suspending their right to bid for international competitions because they did not meet certain commitments that they've made. The very same members here were saying the minister is wrong for doing that.
Point of clarity, Chair. Personal clarity, Chair. Chair, can the member be specific? Say members, I'm part of these members, and especially I'm new, I must understand the party, as I wanted to, who specifically said the same members must not support. Can he be specific?
That he must to present, and you must do follow-up questions. If we can do that, you'll have in that time that when DG responded and asked further questions, clarification from each of us. Let's save that chance.
I'm asking the member, as I want clarity, to understand Honorable Galekhoma, he's generalizing. Now I wanted to find out, for me to understand his question. What does this question come from?
Can I repeat myself? Can you wait till then that we are having a follow-up question on anyone's comment? I'll give you that chance.
Chair, I'm surprised about what is happening here because the member spoke. We did not interject when he was speaking. I'm speaking. I'm making my own points. The member is interjecting.
No, Honourable Bergman, I was having the right to do that. I'm hearing. I must get all of your points in order that I must respond as a chair. So I'm now ruling, saying that he must keep that question until the member finishes, and I will be giving each and every member, even himself, to do a follow-up clarification from each member. But whilst I'm chairing, I need to ask the question because I wanted to guide the meeting. Continue.
Because we will do the same thing. It's not to say we can't interrupt them when they speak. So I must be allowed to speak. allow them to speak. So I was saying members of the DA, because that is what you want me to say, cannot come here and behave as if they don't know what has transpired in this committee. Because this presentation is not for the first time that we have a presentation. We have had a presentation, and in terms of that presentation, it was clear that everything is subject. The bid was subject to further negotiations. Secondly, any country bids to host sporting events, and they bid in order to increase tourism, in order to make their country look better comparatively. So I'm asking members of the DA that are they saying we must disallow bidding in South Africa? And why double talk? Because last time when the minister banned or reprimanded five federations that they won't be allowed to host because they did not meet certain targets as they had agreed, as they had presented to him, the very same members were the ones that were saying the minister is wrong. Now, our view as the ANC is that we cannot host and be built without having a say as the country. At the moment, it is not the department that withdrew bidding. It is the CGF itself, because it wanted to hold the gun to the country and force the country to host under their own conditions. And I think the department, the minister through his department and the government was correct that they put their ability to can host at 4.2, and they did not withdraw the right to host. It is the CGF itself that decided that no, they'll go and give others a chance to host. And we also support the approach of the government in that we can host and spend money while currently the economic climate of the country is worse. There is no growth. I command the department, the government, for having stood their ground that they host at 4.2 billion, and it is the CGF itself that decided to withdraw, to take the right away from South Africa. With that, I rest my case.
Thank you, honorable members. My intake in this point, I wanted to check that when country called South Africa is bidding, are you not supposed to have a budget to go and bid? Because I'm suspecting when we are doing bidding, the intention is that that event must come to South Africa. And when we are bidding, we can win or lose. That's my understanding. If I'm not correct, you will be correcting me, DG. Even in 2010, when we wanted that we must have these games, we had a budget that we must go and beat. You can't beat by politics or by just talking. You must have a budget, and that budget is not your own budget. It's the budget that will the government will look in the fiscal implications. So I wanted to check that this amount that is being queried by my colleagues, are we right that we must query that why did you go and bid, and when we are losing that money? But how can you fly and go anywhere without a budget? How are you going to bid? And also, in that question that I wanted to check what is Honorable Mkhlongo is saying, I'm still wanting that DG, can you assist even myself as chairperson to tell me about what is it that is sensitized, in order that we must all understand that today you are coming in this committee, what we have been presenting, but today we come with a sensitized presentation. Since we have been here, we have been presenting, as we are saying, that five times we were here. But the only part that I'm saying, I'm suspecting that we can be unfair as this committee, that you cannot budget to go and bid. And irrespective of you lose or you lost then, but the budget must be there in order that you must go and bid. So to my understanding as chairperson, as an individual member of this committee, I'm suspecting that keep it on doing an open bidding until you sign, when we are guaranteed that the fiscal of this country is going to meet their demands, this CGF. But by putting it openly, it assisted us. Because as we're sitting here, we didn't get our increment in South Africa, everybody, because of the economic situation that you are in on. If now you have signed, you are supposed to have a bill of 8.5 billion against 4.3. What are we going to say as South Africans, that we have challenge of we don't have jobs, we have challenge that everybody didn't get increment because of the situation of the social economy, but also was still suffering because prices are up whilst everyone was supposed to get an increment. How were you going to pay back this 8.5 if we have signed? Schooled us in order that you must get up understanding why you didn't do ABC, why you have done ABC. But my understanding that you can't go and beat without involvement of money. DG, with respect, if it means that you must adjourn here at 7 p.m. because we still have other things in the agenda, you must change your flights. We are not going to do injustice if we'll be rushing for the flight. This is very important. We need to discuss it, and we're still going to finish our agenda today because it's very important that this agenda must be finished today. If it means it's going to be 12 down, please change your flight, because we want clarifications. We want to dig each and every information in order that when we're going to constituents, we must have clarification. On the third, we're starting our constituency work without information from the department. Seemingly, the minister was going to say what he is saying, but we still want the minister, because our honorable members, they still want him to come and clarify. But the main person who's also DG, you do account to us as this committee. If it means it's 12 down, everybody must change the flight.
Thank you, Chair. We are prepared for 12 midnight. We will be here as long as the committee requires us. Chair, let me first respond to Honorable Bartman. Chair, I think this is an attack on my integrity, because I've never come and lied to the committee or misled the committee or withheld information or otherwise, and I would suggest that perhaps the Hansard reports and the Hansard be listened to of the previous engagements, because it isn't fair that I come and I get accused of deliberately misleading the committee. This allegation was also made previously about the minister and couldn't be tested.
Chair, points of order. Chair, this is the second uncomfortable meeting where myself and my previous colleague have been attacked for attacking the DG's integrity, and I've never done any of that. If the DG is going to speak on behalf of the minister and on behalf of Mark Alexander and other people that have presented on the Commonwealth, then I'm talking to the whole collective. I'm definitely not getting personal, and I think he should refrain from being personal too.
What is Mark and minister? I don't get you. In order that I must caution the DG.
Chair, in previous meetings, it was raised through questions in Parliament, questions to Parliament. We had a whole meeting where the DG went to town about how we've insulted his integrity and all that, and it was never the case. I bared the brush, and I was not sensitive about it. I felt attacked. Now the DG is saying that I'm again attacking his integrity, and I've never mentioned the DG. I said people have reported on the Commonwealth, which has been, there's been three people that report on the Commonwealth, so please, it must stop being personal.
DG, can you get on, because I don't want to do a dialogue. Honorable, when he's responding, he's talking about Minister and Mark. I don't understand what he's talking about, but I don't want to dilute your responses. You will be responding yourself when you are saying Honorable Bergman is attacking you, and now is telling me about Mark and Minister. I don't want to bog on that, but you have heard yourself that he's reacting on what you are saying. Please elaborate. Why are you saying that Honorable Bergman is doing this thing, questioning your integrity? Please, other members, they must wait until I give them a chance. Let me give it back to the DG, Honorable the Whip.
Yes, Chair. Thanks. I can elaborate. In all fairness, Honorable Bergman said the DG withheld this important piece of information. I'm quoting him verbatim, and that is why I had requested that we listen to Hansard. And that is why I've said so, because there is a basis on that. It is not about Mark, it isn't about the minister, it was about this. And when I shook my head, he then said, oh, you can correct me if I am wrong. And that is why I had decided that I must place it on record, because it is not fair and it is not proper. Even when I come to account to this committee, unless somebody proves otherwise, an allegation that says I have withheld important piece of information away from the committee is a very serious allegation, and which has a bearing on the integrity of the person so being alleged to have done such an act. And that's why I'm saying it's an attack on my integrity, because it isn't an issue of generalistic behavior. That is why I was emphatic to say, let us listen to Hansard. That's why I proposed that. So I don't know how am I out of order, Chair.
We'll propose to listen to Hansard. Please to do that. Yeah. And the point taken, and even taking the point that Honorable Bergman felt that it's not true that we are doing that. answered people who are doing that work are in what is anyone who's taking minutes here?
So if answered is not here, I'm going to buy the tape because I'm sure that it has recorded that. I'm going to buy that tape. And I will, with my personal money, and I will share it with the chair. Because I don't take kindly to people are taking that
day to day. The gentleman that they didn't even tell, I welcome everybody, that please, I don't know what is going on, Thabo, with your department. Because whenever we in our meetings, we use that there's somebody recording. When I was in trouble of one other thing, I had to flew down to Cape Town and then to listen in the tape. It was demo when I was hearing verbatim what Gideon is saying and what I've said and what the committee was saying. And that is when that I was having a power to reject all what was in the media about what I've said, because Temu, who was an advisor to the committee, was recorded everything, and I was having guards now to respond to that paper, but no one did put my responses on that paper. They were pleased of doing, bashing me in my integrity, but when I got that, no one did put it on the paper. I wish that it must not happen again. I'm saying there's somebody who's doing it. Are you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
PMG.
PMG, no. They're always assisting us. And they have been here to listen to each and everybody. They are seemingly were like in a SAFA scandal when the honorable members and everybody is in a mood, but I like this mood. Everybody must say what he wants you to say, and it must be recorded, because this is a committee of democracy. DG, we are covered, it is there.
Yes, I will ask the chair to listen to it and to advise, Chair, because I don't take kindly to my integrity being attacked when I've never given any person a reason to attack it. You know, so I think that's the concern that I raise. Chair, let me respond to some of the questions that have been raised. The issues about making ministers famous and what, I will not enter into that. I'm sure that will wait for when the minister is here to respond for himself, whether this is being done for him to become famous or not.
Just a moment. Please, DG, you are right. Honorable Mkhom, I've heard you when you're talking about Twitter and everything.
No,
listen to me. Listen to me. Listen is a skill. I didn't want to say to you, now you're talking about tweets, about minister, and minister is not. No, don't laugh it, because these things want to be a united committee. When we are talking about the committee issues, we must not go to these tweeters of you, especially the young ones and old ones, because the tweeting and whatever of the minister and you and those who are, you have said so, I've heard you, but because I'm just this person who didn't want that, I must stop you. You have said so. Listen, that UDG must come, Honorable Bergman, Honorable Mkhongo, let's just wait that everything that we have said, if UDG is responding on it, I'm saying that I've heard you talking about minister is always tweeting. And it's one other thing that one other time they wanted me to respond, and I've said I don't respond to tweeters. Please, I'm not going to give you chance. After DG has finished, we must raise our objections and contribution. Let's give him say what he wanted to say.
Point of order, Chair.
Don't respond.
It's a point of order, Chair. Since we have answered, can we get that the response, Chair, can be noted?
It's not a point of order. I've already said the answer is here.
Yeah,
so you cannot raise the hand with the point of order.
No, Chair, I'm raising, maybe now I'm listening, it's a skill. Hear me, what I'm saying, and then we'll take it from there. I've never said to the DG or to this house of a Twitter, I've never mentioned the name Twitter. I've mentioned a website. A website and a Twitter are totally two different things. Maybe we must workshop each other. I can confirm that I've said a website. Now, a Twitter, I've never used the word Twitter.
Honorable
can we check the...
Honorable Song, I'm still chairing. We said, when we are saying maybe we need a workshop, it's an allegation. We are thinking that there are those who are brighter than others, who must be workshopped. We are just contributing. This is a committee. Why must we be workshopped? Workshopped on what?
Chair, you've mentioned that I've mentioned Twitter, and I've never mentioned Twitter in this meeting.
No, but what workshop? Who must
people must
workshop?
Understand what is a website and what is a Twitter.
You are out of order.
That's why I'm saying that, because Chair, you've quoted me saying I've mentioned a tweet, and I've never done that.
We are out of order. When I was saying we are out of order, I was saying that when we are saying we must be workshopped, that's where am I now? No, but...
Chair, I'm not making a dialogue, and I respect you. I'm asking you now you must withdraw. I've never used any word yet Twitter in this meeting. It's what I'm saying, like, my integrity is undermined, like, it is, you know.
Before I get referred to BMG twice, can I just take responsibility for the Twitter comments? I'm glad that the DG now can distinguish between the minister himself, but I was the one that raised Twitter. Thank you.
It's not you, my apologies, because between you, there was somebody who was talking about the minister, about Twitter, and I was feeling that I wanted to object, but because sometimes people, they do have that. I was going, when I'm rounding up, my apology, but Honorable Mhlongo, when I'm chairing, when I'm saying no, you don't want to listen to me. We are remembering me of Northwest, that mayor, now we are behaving that mayor, not respecting chairperson. And this is the first time that in this committee I have somebody not respecting my ruling. We are doing continuously. Please refrain from that. Please refrain from that. Somebody who's just arriving is coming for communication. So I'm saying, hey, she's coming very late because this is a hot meeting today. We do welcome you, but we don't know what are you going to respond because things have happened today in this committee. Woe unto you. We'll assist by that PMG on all what is going on today, and I'm suspecting your paper will be reached to get more money from today. I'm accepting your apology. DG?
Thank you, Chair. I'll respond to the other things, but I can assure members of the committee that I know my place, and I know the difference between what a minister is and what a director general is. And I know my role as accounting officer. Now, on the issue of the concerns that that have been raised are what were raised by members of the committee, and the department has not considered those concerns, and it says if it's a script now, in all fairness, I think we must listen to Hansard of the previous meetings. And even when we were asked by this committee as to why there were media reports suggesting that we may lose the games, and what we said then, we shared the similar concerns. And to say that we never considered those concerns, I think, is not holistically a true reflection of what really transpired in this committee in the previous meetings, and I would ask that that be referred to and be listened to as well. Secondly, there's been an issue that says this is a bigger concern that we had not signed the agreement, that we were quick to announce that we're hosting, and yet the agreement was not signed. And therefore, it's even a bigger problem that how do you bid without knowing the terms? I think we must make a clear separation. As a staff chair, we're willing to share with the committee the country's bidding and hosting strategy. We presented it in 2012 to this committee. We can share it again and present it before the committee so we can know. Let's make a clear distinction between what bidding is and what hosting is, because I know people use this interchangeably and quite with ease, but the two processes are quite distinct and different. It's not the same thing. And to use them that interchangeably to make a point that then misleads the committee is a problem in itself. Our view is clear. We were bidding, and we announced our intention to bid. And when we lost our intention to bid, we came to this committee to inform the committee that we will be bidding for the 2022 Commonwealth Games. And since we paid the bidding fee, the lodgement of our intent to bid, it's like when you bid for a tender in government. You see the advert and you say, oh well, I think I can do that job. And then you go, you buy the tender document, and you read it. It's a non-refundable fee. You are going to spend that money. There's no other way. Otherwise, then you will not enter the fray. You will not bid. You have to pay that non-refundable fee, and you cannot then, when after you read the tender document, you realize that what has been required perhaps is above your capacity, and you want to declare that fruitless and wasteful expenditure because you ultimately did not follow through and bid. When you realize that, no, you can't, it can't be like that. Everywhere in the world, all other countries, everyone, work on the same basis as we do work. And it is in that document that you see the specifications. But those specifications, we can share them with the committee. They are such broad parameters of what is being required. They will tell you that in our program, here are the 10 codes that are compulsory. And here are the elective codes. You choose minimum of 7 from these codes. And then you have to select there. And then they will give you broad parameters of what is being required. But it is in your bid, it is you who must tell the people you are bidding to say, should I win? This is what I intend to do and how I can do it. And it is up to them to like what you say and say, we think you are the best candidate or not. So the terms and conditions for bidding are pretty clear and we understood them. But that does not mean already you have an agreement. You don't. There is no agreement. The agreement is when they say, we like what you say. Can we now, like in the same process in government when a person tender, so compulsory briefing session, they submit their bids, you appoint a bid evaluation committee of technical experts who are going to see whether these people are responsive to what your requirements are. And when those people suggest to you that this one appears to be the best candidate to deliver the job, then you appoint that person. But then beyond the issue of appointment comes the SLA, where the determination of the standards of delivery of this are then indicated and signed and agreed upon. So in our case, the host city contract constitutes that SLA. It constitutes what then, how the revenue will be shared, how you'll go about it, how many stadia you'll have, all of that. And that is the real agreement, and that's the contention where we are at, that money and that agreement had not been signed because while we were awarded the rights. The bidding, we did it well, and we did it within the parameters. Otherwise, that's why I was saying that the bid evaluation committee or the technical committee of evaluation that came to South Africa to check whether what we are saying makes sense or not would not have awarded us the rights. They would have said South Africa is ill prepared, it is not ready. It's not the first time, by the way, that we were told that our bid was not good enough. This city we're in, Cape Town, bidded for the Olympics, which were announced in 1997. And we started working on our bid in 1995. In that 2 years, just the 2 years of building up a bid to submit for the IOC to make a determination, Chair, we had already spent 979 million by this city, under the PA government, this city. So, consequently, this city, when it did that, and it did it, there was no brouhaha about this issue. We did lose. By the time the announcement was made, for Athens in that regard, and we lost. We lost then, and we also bid it for other things. We bid it for the World Cup of football twice. We lost on both occasions. The last time we lost to Germany by a single vote because Charles Dempsey didn't vote. And even in that equation, we'd already spent, the good thing is that the bulk of the money is private sector money, by the way. We'd already spent in that bid of the World Cup, which we lost to Germany, we'd spent also 810 million. So I am saying that even then, the issue that we lost, everybody was disappointed. The media, Zabiro wrote a nice cartoon saying to Charles Dempsey, "Say Marse," and then he put the three dots, you know. So, but it showed how society was well mobilized, including media, including opposition, including everybody, that, and nobody ever raised the issue of the cost to say, how much did it cost us to beat? It was never an issue. It was felt that the country lost out on something that was a good cause that we had invested wisely in pursuing. And that is why even when we came to the 2010 FIFA World Cup, which we subsequently won, and we bid it, this time, Cabinet decided to pull all stops and spend 1.2 billion rands to bid. And we won the bid. And everybody celebrated. And nobody ever said, why did you spend so much to bid? So, the distinction between bidding and hosting must be clearly be made, and that the two concepts must be separated so that we can understand what we're talking about. Bidding is like paying your car insurance. You can't say month end after you have paid a premium and you didn't get into an accident and say this is money wasted, you know, because I should have had the accident so these people can pay because I had paid a premium. It can't work like that. I mean, in real life, that's not how things work. So is sport. The rules apply to all of us, all countries. So why do all other countries bid and continue to do so? By the time Edmonton decided to withdraw, it had already spent by far more than what we had spent. By far, compared to us, by the time they decided to withdraw. We were fortunate, and the reason why, relatively speaking, yes, in South African terms and where we are, this money may seem quite a lot. But in relative terms, compared to what it costs to bid for this nature of events, we have spent significantly far less. And the reason for that is simpler, is that because of the nature of the Commonwealth and the countries that vote there, Commonwealth is of nations, is a nations that were once colonized by Britain. The only thing that brings them together is that they were once a British colony. And because Britain colonized Africa the most, we had more votes from Africa. And that's why at the Youth Games in Botswana, we hosted a dinner of all African countries except Zimbabwe, which is suspended from the Commonwealth. And all of them agreed with us that they will vote for us should we bid. And this was on the back of the fact that Gold Coast, that is going to bid now, had just lost to Abuja by 4 votes. Abuja lost to Gold Coast by 4 votes previously, the 2018 edition. And it was felt even back then by Africa that
we should have done better. And so Durban stood a better chance of winning than Abuja. Abuja has no infrastructure, has nothing, and so on. And it was felt that the two economic giants of Africa, Nigeria and South Africa, were the better people to host and bring the games for the first time to the African soil. Because of that, overnight in that dinner, we already had like 46% of the vote of the Commonwealth. We needed a few other groupings to support us in order for us to bring the bid beyond doubt. And that we knew was going to save us a lot of money. But there were things you can't avoid. And this is what the key issues are, because with the Commonwealth Games, you look at the type of the technical expertise that you are required. The sketches, the artist impressions, and everything that you need to prepare, and the detailed plans and floor plans of each and every venue and every other thing. You need all of that. You need skills that you would not normally possess in government readily. You have to hire, unfortunately, consultants to do this. And the Treasury, too, would not have none of it. That the formula we used on Glasgow, we must just cut and paste and do that. They said the economic situation may not work here. We needed economists, which we needed to hire, to tell us exactly what the benefits would be before Treasury and Cabinet could actually approve the budget. And when Ernst & Young was hired to do this job, it cost us a small fortune, a lot of millions, but they did a nice economic study that showed us that, in fact, by the template of Glasgow, we were projecting that the economic returns will just be 11 billion. But when Ernst & Young is an independent, because Minister Nene then said to Minister Mbalula that, no, I see, but is this thing you are saying? He said, yes. Who did this? No, he's asked the department and this, and with the expense of the Commonwealth Games Federation. He said, no, I want an independent study. And that independent study ultimately came, and it came from Ernst & Young. And when it came, it was saying 20 billion. We presented it here to this house of the benefits of the Commonwealth Games. We were asked, what would those benefits be? And we delivered them. And we said, here's a study. And we shared the study with this committee. I remember the day I came in a big bag with a lot of files and folders that had Commonwealth Games issues, including that study, inside. And we shared it with this committee and submitted it and said, this will be the benefits. So, as it is being said, it can be said, well, why did we enter the race? We knew why we were entering it. And we entered it exactly for the very reasons Honorable Bergman say we must focus on. All our bid documents were saying exactly that. At no stage, there was never even a single photo of the minister in our bid documents. In all our documents, it never said anything about the minister or making a minister popular or whatever. It spoke everything about Durban, about Etekwini, what is on offer, what can be delivered there, how are we going to do it. Everything was in there, including the benefits, the economic benefits. That's what we spoke about at that time. I'm asked to clarify what is the 1.5 million British pounds about. This 1.5 million British pounds is what the CGF proposed, that it is a hosting fee. You pay it annually. And they said, after, in Auckland, in the first letter they wrote to us, they said it is due immediately. So immediately after they announced that they are awarding us the rise, they said it is due now, and the next tranche will be paid in March. And then thereafter, March, on the anniversary of March, every year until you host. So you say I must calculate it by into rents. I'm sure we can do it quickly by calculator, what 1.5 million British pounds is in today's currency, because it's not also fixed. So each year as the Brent pound exchange fluctuates, you pay it like that. So on anniversary of 31 March, 2017, you must pay it. On 2018, whatever the pound will be, you pay that amount. When just like that, and they refuse to lock it into rents. And that's what one of our, by the way, this was one of our biggest contentions, to say we must tie it and tie it to the rent. And we were clever, because by November, you know, the rent had already began strengthening. And we were happy with a stronger rent, because it meant lesser British pounds. And so we were insisting that we pick a spot date, we tie the money like that, and we declare the same equal value of that money, and we log it into the 31st March every year until the time we host. They were not happy with that arrangement. They were not prepared to do that. They were saying, no, the fortunes of the rand and the dollar must tie together, and the pound must tie together. And so by the time we finish, by 2022, it may be very possible that maybe paying 1.5 times what we would have paid when we started on that longevity and duration, depending on how strong the rand will have. And what helped us was actually Brexit. And we wanted, because once they did, the pound went down, and we wanted to tie it at that time, knowing that the rand is strong and the pound is weaker. And if we tie it, we'll pay much lesser for the rest of the period. So that is that 1.5 million British pounds. Let me move to the issue whether we have sanitized the presentation. I don't know, Chair. This is a presentation to this committee. If a member sees another presentation to cabinet or to somebody which presentation is not meant for this committee, it is not meant for this committee. Whatever presentation may have been seen is not for this committee. And it was never said that it is for this committee. And that the presentation that is due for this committee and that comes to this committee is said to be sanitized, comparable to something else that has nothing to do with this committee, I think is just unfortunate. But in fairness, in fact, there's nothing wrong with the idea of a sanitized presentation. If it is clean, I am happy, Chair, that I'm giving the committee a clean bill of health and a clean presentation and a clean report. There's nothing to what about that. In fact, I ought to be commended, not chastised, that I am giving a very clean thing than a dirty presentation that's full of errors and full of miscommunications and so on. The committee must actually commend me, and I invite the honourable member to have coffee with me and buy me coffee in commending me for giving a clean and sanitised presentation to the committee. Really, there's nothing wrong there. Let me move to the issue of the letter of guarantee. I think that we can share with you openly. The issue of the copy of the agreement, there is no agreement. So there's nothing to share with you. There's no agreement. I can tell you the many things we discussed, as I've already said on record, on answered. I said them already, but there's no agreement. So I don't know when you say you want an agreement. The agreement is an agreement once it is signed. There's no agreement. So I think that's what it is. And if you say that agreement doesn't mention 8.5 billion, I don't know how you know that, because I take it you don't have it, because the only person who has the draft agreement is me. So I would not know how you have seen that supposedly an agreement that exists somewhere, you have seen it and it doesn't contain 8.5 billion. I don't know how you know that. Maybe there are other powers you have, like with Osangoma, that I would not have to be able to know that there is such a thing, but with the agreement that are with me, say something else than what you are saying. Why was SASCOC not running the process? SASCOC is a CGA. It's a CGA. But let me tell you this. This model I'm talking about is not a new model. When South Africa hosted the FIFA 2010 World Cup, on that board, the Deputy Minister of Finance then, Ntantlanene, was a member of that board. There was nothing untoward about it. And so were many other ministers like Muzwaledi and so on. But what we are proposing is not something new. It's not different. But do you want us to make an investment of 4 billion and leave it only to SASCOC and CGF to run the board? Honestly, that's irresponsible. The law, the South African law doesn't allow that. And that's why I quoted Section 38 of the PFMA. South African law doesn't allow that. So I don't know why were being expected that we should have left 4.32 billion with SASCOC and the CGF, and then they just run the show and government watches by the sideline until the day they come and say, we have run into financial problems, can you give us some more? And they call upon the guarantee and government must top up. I don't think that is proper, that we should be requested that. 50-50, did I ever say politicians? No, I never said that. We can go back to answer. I said 50% government and 50% sport. That's what I said. And that's what our documents are saying, 50% government, 50% sport. That's equilibrium, that's equity. And we do so because we don't say government wants to run the games. We do so because we are saying that we must have a fair share and a fair measure to protect our investment as government. And we need to sit on the board. And I explained that the day-to-day operationalization of the games, the board will appoint the CEO will appoint the staff members to deliver the games. That's not government delivering the games, no. That's an LOC delivering the games with government oversight, as the law requires us to do so. what do we mean by an open-ended agreement? Again, I didn't say open-ended agreement, I said shortfall guarantee, open-ended shortfall guarantee. This is what we are being requested. This is the requirement that we give an open-ended guarantee, which means we can't cap it. So whatever the shortfall is, if these people come and say, we have a shortfall of 10 billion, somebody must cover that shortfall of 10 billion. Now, we are saying we cannot do that. You have said that, I must tell you, in rents, what we are talking about and what the 18% is. If you read, I'll share with you the copy of the Minister of Finance, the guarantee. The guarantee is for 4.32 billion rents. 4.32 billion rands being the total budget, including CAPEX, capital expenditure. 1.3 billion budgeted for the Athletes Village, and a further 517 million budgeted for upgrades to stadia and temporary facilities. The rest of the money remaining out of 4.32 billion becomes operational expenditure. This is now money to really deliver the games. In that Athletes Village, well, that we took it as a turnkey, so meaning beds and curtains and crockery, what is bought with the 1.3 billion. But on the operations, those people staying there have got to eat. Laundry must happen. They are bedding, every other thing. The buses that transport them daily to the venues and so on. The rest of that money is operational expense. And that operational expense ran into about 2.8 billion. And that 2.8 billion that we were putting up to run the games, we were saying that 18% of it, which came at about 430 million rands. So we add the 430 on top of the 2.8 to make a total operational. And with the understanding that the 430 is only cashed in, indeed, when there is a problem. Financial. Should they run into financial troubles, we can only top up to 450. But beyond that, hey, government can't cover open-endedly. So I think that was what we were saying in respect of this, and those are the figures if you wanted to really understand them. In fact, a journalist called Matthew Savides, I believe he says his sources within the CGF. So someone in the CGF is feeding him information. He says, all right, they say the budget is 4.3. Do you know how much they have guaranteed? He actually wrote a nice article in the Sunday Times where he says that the finance minister and the treasury confirmed to him. He also chooses the facts nicely. He has the letter, by the way. We gave it to him. No problem. He has the letter of the finance minister to our minister giving the guarantee, and the one he gave to the CGF. We gave him the copy of the one he gave to the CGF. That's what the CGF has. So if they are telling him selectively what they don't want him to know, he said, let's favor you. Here it is. So he has that letter. That letter, in it, it's quite clear. But he was saying that they say they have only approved 2.8 billion. We said, read the whole thing. It's 4.32. The other is CAPEX. You have to remove CAPEX in order for you to determine, because if it is human settlements building the Athletes Village, we can't count the operational expense or the cap on that as well. We have to put it only on the operational expense, which is what the board will be in charge of in terms of delivery of games. And that's how our calculation was like that. And we explained to him, although he still chose to write only what the CGF told him, but not what is before him, because he could have said there, but they say, but according to the letter I have from the Treasury, it actually says 4.32 billion, because that's what the letter say. So can I move to the issue of, I've been asked whether SASCOC advised the minister in November, I presume it's November 2016, that we can't host these games. We have no letter, nor a meeting, nor anything with that, unless minister met with someone from SASCOC separately, where I'm not aware, perhaps, that I would not know. But as far as I know, on official records through our registry and everything, we have no formal correspondence whatsoever. In fact, journalists were asking us, as much as the committee also asked us in November last year. And I explained to the committee that we are still going to negotiate. We're negotiating only on the 20 November somewhere. I can't remember the exact date. But it's in our timeline, I can share with you here. So we were negotiating with the CGF in November. That's November 2016, according to that timeline. We went to London, and that was our final meeting, because they kept on raising issues. We had already met them. I think we had four negotiations meetings in total. And ultimately in London, we agreed with them, and they gave us an impression that they understood everything we were saying. And then they said to us that we must lock all the documents there. And you will see that we say that we had lost about only three documents. We uploaded them. There is a system they call CGF EKS site. You load information onto that site. We did. We lost by the deadline. They had said we must finish everything by the 30th. And then we agreed on that 30th. But when they issued their statement in London, they created an impression that because we are not complying with the days, they had imposed a deadline of the 30th on us. But we're discussing with them nicely. We're asking them, when do you want the documents? And they were saying, no, can we have everything by the 15th of December? I told them, my staff are going to go on holiday. Can we not give the documents earlier to you? It's us who asked to give the documents earlier. And we said, we proposed and we agreed month and 2 week turnaround, agreed, 30 November. But when they issued their statement, they said, we told South Africa that it must give us the documents by the 30th of November and so on and so on. But we kept quiet because we're not in the business of trying to embarrass the CGS and going publicly to say, but what are you talking about and so on. Because when you negotiate with people, we wanted not to create issues that will cloud the negotiations. We wanted them to make a decision free of prejudice or anything of any other kind. And I think that was the whole point. And then you have said we must explain, because whether the minister misled you by saying he's still collating information. No, I think we must separate the two issues. The information I provided to you is the information that I gave you about the entire procedure and process. It has nothing to do with what your question asked. Your question asked what was the money used for. You wanted a breakdown of that. So, and the minister said he still has got to collate information from all the three tiers, meaning eThekwini must tell us how much they have spent, because I'll give you an example. We may know the bigger. I can give you like the ballpark figures of who contributed what. But this is not the total expenditure, I have to tell you. Because in terms of this ballpark figure, you see we are at 113.5 million. But you also saw our statement. We said we project that we would be at about 118 million when all is collated. That's the projection. I can't tell you with certainty now, until it's all done, because each and every one of the three spheres have been paying for its own officials to travel inside the country for meetings, even globally where we go to lobby and so on. And all that, the travel, what must all be harnessed together so we can tell Parliament accurately how much exactly in full it has been. So I think it would be premature, particularly when the bidding company, we're only winding it up now. So it has to finish, the audit reports must be approved, and every other thing, and then when we are done and Cabinet has accepted the final report, we will publish. Just to give you an example, we only published the FIFA closeout report in May of 2012, about 2 years after the actual thing, but that's how government works, because there was a stadium development fund. It was administered by DBSA. We have to wait for the financial year of DBSA to do that. Their auditors to close the books on that side. We are audited by the Auditor General on our side. We have to wait for this. We must wait for the financial year of the city. Even the bidding company itself, its board must sit, finalize and dissolve, and then hand over the reports, and it must be audited fully, and we accept the report. And if there's issues, we reconvene them and so on. So it's a tedious process. It's not an easy process, but in the interest of fairness, that's why we were quite forthright. an open when we started to say, look, so far what we know has been put in and we can account for easily without the travels, the what, we will amount to 113.5 million as contributed by different, I can tell you SAA 1.5 million, National Lottery 63 million, Tequini how much, we Sport and Recreation just about 2 million, you know, so I can share with you who contributed what to the figure, but we still have got to go back to our own books to look at when the CGF was here, we bought them lunch, how much was that lunch? You know, when we met with these people and we negotiated, there was a car hired, and how much was that car? All that is isolated and audited, and when it is done, there's nothing to hide, nothing to, we will come and openly and issue even a closed-out report of the bidding company. We always do that. We always table those reports, and we're supposed to account to this August House and this committee, and we always table the reports. So we will table that report. You will have it in full once all of that has happened, and I think that is the context under which that was said. Did we consider all the implications before bidding? Yes, we did. And that's why we could also prepare a budget. And to prove this and to belabor the point, like I said, we had considered that we already had 46% of vote. We knew that, unlike the usual bidding for a multi-coded sport event, we would have actually, our budget would have needed to be in the region of 1.5 billion. But we knew that we didn't have to fight for votes so much. That's why our budget was just 200 million. And you will see that in the CAB memo we sent to Cabinet for it to consider. Cabinet said, yes, we see all of this, and where you say we have considered all the financial implications and we presented them before Cabinet. Cabinet approved, but still directed us to go sit with the Treasury. We went on, I can show you on our this, there is a committee in the Treasury of experts. It's called the Fiscal Liability Committee. I must just remember and see when we made that presentation to the FLC there in June 2016. We, long before the rights were awarded, we had already considered all the different methodologies of hosting these games, the best ways we're going to save money, the best ways we're going to, and how are we going to raise more revenue and all this. We presented before the Fiscal Liability Committee of our country. So all financial implications were fully ventilated and considered with experts in the Treasury, and that's why they were so comfortable to give us the guarantee. The guarantee would never have come if they had not ventilated all the issues and had considered all the cases before us and so on. Last thing that was raised by Honorable Manana, who left, was the Konobia side, the red one. We insist, yes, it was. I think as simple as that. We don't think we should have built houses in Windsor Park or White Park just to meet the requirement of the games and then have facilities where we don't really need them. We knew where we needed them. And ideally, it is not ideal for people to stay in those two areas. And the reason is simple. Just by the sheer volume and there are two stadia there. You just have got to look at traffic impact and so on, particularly during the days they are games or their tournaments and so on. It will be a nightmare for the residents and for everybody. So it is for that reason that we consider that Konobia was the best site, still remains the best site. I was asked, how long does it take from Konobia on a normal day? I will be lying, I don't know. Because the only time I went there was when we were with the people who came to do the evaluation. And we then said, because in our proposal we were saying we'll have lanes dedicated to the games. And these lanes, by the way, you know, Tequini has approved now. By 2019, they are starting their BRT project. I'm sure you know that. So the first lane would have been the airport lane, and it would have been dedicated and ready for the games in 2022. So that's what we had committed in our bid book to say, because the lane doesn't exist yet, but it will start being built in 2019, but by 2023 it will be there. That lane of BRT will also use it as the games lane, meaning only traffic for the games will be on that lane. And so we wanted to prove that with the lane, it will be quicker. And that's why we asked Metropolis to escort the bus and open up the one lane. That lane, I mean, it's everywhere. You go to London 2012, you find the games lane. You go to Sydney, you go to Atlanta, you find the games lane. During the duration of the games, the inner lane is always designated for only Olympic traffic or something like that. So that's exactly what we're proposing. And so I'll be lying to you if I say I know. I don't know. But judging by the fact that Konobia site is right next to the airport, and judging by when I'm driving alone, flying from Devon CBD to the airport, I know it takes me about 30 minutes. So for that reason, it will be like twice the amount of time, if I use that as a measure to give you an indicator. But I don't know exactly how much that would be. Now, the last thing that was raised by the chair, I think I've covered honestly. The chair raised the issue whether don't we budget to bid, and is that money? Honestly, if we didn't have the cabinet approval, because the issue of bidding and hosting is relative to the powers of the minister as they are espoused in the National Sport and Recreation Act. And that act says he's got the power to do the bidding and hosting regulations. The regulations are clear. The regulations say that for mega events like this one, we need cabinet approval. Did we get cabinet approval to do this? Yes, we did. And that's what then will legalize the bidding costs, because if we did it without cabinet approval, it would have constituted unauthorized expenditure. So, but the fact that we followed the letter and spirit of the law to the latter means that we had provided the budget significantly for this and used the budget for the intended purpose for which it was authorized to be utilized for. And I don't need to say that our APP came before this committee. It had that. Our budget had exactly that, and it showed that when budgeted 200 million, it was processed by this committee. This committee approved that budget. It went to the Appropriations Committee of Parliament, which is the representatives of the people, and it was approved. And the vote was debated and finally approved by Parliament. So with that budget, so to suggest that there is anything untoward about the budget would not be correct. So I think that's all the questions I've been asked, Chair.
With me, I wanted to clarify, and I was happy when you said that when we are bidding, we're supposed to have a budget. My question was related on what already we have explained. Any follow-up questions? Honorable Mthongo, Honorable Bachman.
Thanks, Chair. You said, Mr. Chair, I don't want to abuse this. I must even respond to the question of clarity and everything, not only from the DG. I think I want to put it to you, Mr. Ralehoma, that this presentation or the information, I've checked all presentation of Commonwealth Games that presented in this committee. There's no one presentation that is telling us more details about the annual fee, which is 1.5 billion. There's no way that has been presented. Now, I'm putting it to you because you're saying I don't check. I've checked. That's why I'm running with this issue, because I've checked all presentation. I'm asking this question because I was asking myself what happened. Another issue, DG, I want to put it to you that Cape Town afford at that time. There was affordability issue. Now, don't tell us about years ago and today. Affordability. It's all about the affordability. Today and last time, it's different. Now, Cape Town at that time, as a DA, we're affording. Today, Devon, it's not affording a Tegwin ANC municipality. And we are honest. It's about affordability at that time. Please, let's not politicize it. It was affordability issue, the question that I was based on. The chair wanted to ask affordability. SLA, maybe until I have the documentation that you share, when do you usually sign for an SLA? You know, I've never tendered. Maybe I must workshop myself. You know, when do you sign for SLA? Is it before or after? Because there's a tricky part that I don't understand, especially on SLA. Because if they came before everything, they saw everything like an oversight, so to say. Now later, SLA is not, it's this and this. Maybe, Chair, let me have some other comments. Let me have the documentation. When the minister come on the 3rd, I'll have more questions based on the documentation that I have. I don't want to miss it, because for information, why I'm asking, two separate amounts. your website. It gave us the first amount, and that's why the total budget, which I'm aware, and that's why I ask you that the total budget is 2 million for you to hold. 20 million. Is it 200? Sorry. 200, sorry. Budget. I'm aware. But now, for now, luckily we cleared that you still have to audit it. It's not even that 180 million. Fair, I think it's, I understand that. Now, issues of finances and issues of SLA, whereby I understand as a layman, I'm not a technocrat like you guys, just as a layman, to say, okay, 1 plus 1 is 2. And that's why it was a fair question for information to ask about the pound. It was a fair question. And I don't think if they've asked that, they failed to ask it at that time. I can put it in his absence here, that I was going to ask you, and you can, and luckily you've explained that there's an interest, and then they wanted it to accumulate every year, which is, it's a fair response that I've received. But nonetheless, Chair, above all, this issue is about affordability for information. I've raised this based on affordability, the status of our country to date. That is all about it. I thank you.
Why did you fail to ask questions?
Me?
Yes.
Chair, what is going on with your hearing today? I think the...
You are part of us, but you accuse us.
I think
you were part of us then.
You don't have flu anymore. You can hear everything. There's no secrets.
No,
my colleague was saying that it seems that he was only responding to the DA questions because the ANC was asking maybe the question. They were focusing on us. But yeah, that's the problem that I actually have, just to say that the ANC whip over here seems to always take what I say, make it into a nonsensical statement in translation, and then translate it to everyone else that they respond on, which I don't know, I'm sorry he's not yet to hear that, but he must focus on his business. He doesn't have to worry about my business. But it is a sad day when the politics, when the officials start becoming the politicians or want to become the politicians. I'm not sure if we've heard of a reshuffle and now we want to bid for ministerial posts. But we must understand here from our side that I sit here accountable to people that want to know what's happening in sports. I'm not trying to play politics. So the politics is for when we sit in assembly with the politicians. We must try and answer the questions as they're given and not take them personally, not try and put insinuations in and that. I thought the DG was a bit stronger than that, and I hope he is. Let's be honest. You're a Director General, through you, Chair. Let's hope we can understand. It is negligent to spend money on something you don't have. If you're taking Durban's finances, Etiquette's finances, and you're bidding on something, you reasonably expect to win it. You can't just bid. And if you're going to imply, Chair, that I don't know the difference between bidding and hosting, there's going to be a big problem, because then you may be questioning my integrity. Bidding, if you bid for something, you must know that you have a good chance of winning it. So you mustn't be the canine that chases the bus, the tires of the bus, and then you get the tire and you don't know what to do with it because you've got the tire. We know that we're going to bid, and we hope we're going to win the bid, and then we know, hey, we're going to host, and there's two different costs. And to even teach us that we must know that, so then, you know, I don't know where we're preaching to. If we look, there's a precedent that befell us. There was the Glasgow Games, there's the games before us that came from the Commonwealth Games. The legacies from the Commonwealth Games are far different to the legacies of the World Cup Soccer, are far different to the World Cup Olympics, to the Olympics. When we bid for something like the Commonwealth, and I'm glad the DG brought up the Cape Town bid, because I'm not sure which party was in the in the bid at the time. I think it was the DA, but we stand corrected there. Cape Town had the funds. Cape Town had the infrastructure. Cape Town had exactly, they thought they had a very good chance of hosting something that was needed at the time. If we asked ourselves sincerely if we could host the Isiqueni Games, I think the DA has a very proud track record of saying, please don't bid for it. Please don't even go through the bidding. When you did get the bid, we had a very, very proud bid again, of a very proud stance of saying we support you. We'll try and make it work. We'll want to make it work, and I think the DG's a bit skeptical on that. But we said, let's make it work. You know, you've got it. We didn't think you should bid for it, but now let's make it work. But the truth be told, there was a precedent. So when you want to bid for something, you don't just bid in the hope that we do get it, we might not get it. We bid in the hope that we look at the precedent and we see what the precedent has done for the country. So the most important thing that we have to understand, and let me teach the other side of the house something, a thing called opportunity cost. When we take from our budget to go and bid on something, there's an opportunity cost. What is that opportunity cost? Well, the opportunity cost could have been extra playing fields for much needed resources in rural schools where we've come across and we've seen no multi-purpose courts. We could have used that money maybe to assist clubs, like what we heard in cricket yesterday with a vacuum in assistance to clubs. These are the opportunity costs that we belay by not bidding, by bidding for the Commonwealth Games. Now, to understand that, first of all, then to transpose it under the context of how successful have the other countries been with the Commonwealth Games. But the most astonishing omission comes from the ANC whip, in that he thinks, and then the DG agrees, it seems the DG, I don't know if he imposed on his dignity again, but it seems the DG agrees with him through the replies, that there's not a difference between bidding for a World Cup, there's not a difference between bidding for the World Cup cricket games, and there's not a rugby matches, and there's not a difference between the Commonwealth. Again, let me assist the House. We have the infrastructure. Through the World Cup soccer legacy, we have the infrastructure to host what would be a very, very successful cricket game, a World Cup cricket if we ever bid for it. But where we are bidding for the World Cup rugby, and I hope that they continue the bid for the World Cup rugby, we have the infrastructure for the World Cup rugby. There's no money that has to be spent on upgrading any infrastructure. We have the infrastructure. All we need is the international world to come and visit our shores, to come and give jobs to people that are, to the I think it's 8.2 million that are unemployed at this point in time. That's what we need. We need sports tourism. The Commonwealth, I can argue very strongly, because there's a difference between a national games and a regional games, and I hope that people are aware of the differences. The Commonwealth does not bring the legacies that World Cup sporting brings, and I hope for our sake, Chair, as I mentioned yesterday, as a sports committee, that we push and we promote responsible, sustainable sports tourism, because this country needs sports tourism. Thank you.
I'm tempted to talk after you've responded.
Thank you, Chair. My responses will be really quick. Honestly, when we entered the race for the Commonwealth Games, affordability has always been in the back of our minds. And that's why we insisted on a budget of 4.32 billion. I'm not going to belabor the point more. And that's why when what was being proposed to us, we felt it was not affordable, we were prepared to let go of the games. And I think even for us, affordability was key. But government works on a basis of competing priorities. So the bid for Cape Town then, honest, to say that it was affordable in the face of the fact that there were other competing priorities may not necessarily be an accurate statement. All the time, it is about what you want to achieve out of the key issue. So needed, Cape Town didn't have the money. It needed a national guarantee for that purpose. And the bulk of the expenditure came from national. So it will not be proper to say that it is because Cape Town had the money and Cape Town could afford. It needed a national guarantee to be able to pull it through. And the bulk of the funding indeed came through the National Department of Sport to the city. Even when during the World Cup, Cape Town didn't have a ready-made stadium. In fact, we were on the verge of pulling Cape Town out as a host city for the FIFA 2010 World Cup, until Investec stepped in and underwrote some of the guarantee for the stadium. So it's not fair to say that they had. All cities struggle, and most cities, including Cape Town, struggle with this or that. But it is national government, out of the strategy for bidding and hosting, that drives that agenda, and we agree with all cities. Cape Town is no exception in that type of setup and arrangement. It also, Cape Town preferred to host the AFCON and not the CHAN. And I'm sure you remember what the mayor then said when they didn't get the AFCON and we allocated them CHAN. Cape Town was now saying it's no longer even willing to host the CHAN in that regard. And we asked, and they wanted, the mayor, it's not me who politicized this matter. When I responded to it on ENCA, I was responding to a political affront on what was purely an administrative process. Because what I was looking at as an accounting officer was what makes sense, who to host what, and in terms of the availability of the resources and the pool of the type of matches we're talking about. But the mayor then, Dilili, made it an issue to say, why Cape Town is being given, as a World Cup city, is being given the CHAN, which is considered an inferior tournament compared to AFCON. And I had to ask because the political insinuation of that was that we're singling out Cape Town on the basis that it is not run by the ANC. Consequently, I was very quick to respond to say, there are other World Cup cities of the ANC, run by the ANC, like Mangaung and so on, we are also allocated the CHAN and not the AFCON, and that all World Cup cities were to share into the two tournaments, and the money will be made available to make for the shortfalls. Particularly, it's only when Cape Town realized how much was the allocation for CHAN, because we made allocations for CHAN knowing that the tickets for CHAN will be much lesser, so the revenue will be lesser. We made the allocation much higher as compared to when it was. And when Cape Town realized that, all of a sudden, the tune had changed. They now also wanted to host even the opening as well as the closing ceremonies of the CHAN. And we fully awarded that, knowing that of all the cities hosting CHAN, it will only make sense, business sense, to have it in Cape Town. So I think it isn't just simply about politicizing this. And you also know how the Greenpoint Stadium was built. I'm sure all of us know this, and the challenges that we faced, and how much national government had to top up to support that equation. But also the other thing is that I think maybe this is an issue I've not shared of the stance that other countries, progressive countries around the world, how much they have commended us for standing firm. If all of us start doing this, in Brazil, it had to take the people, the masses, to go to the streets and complain that the Brazilian government was giving in a lot to FIFA. It had to take that. But we are from that equation where FIFA was a law unto itself. I think these days is a bit of a changed animal ever since Gianni Infantino has been elected, and with what the Americans have done to them and suspending people and doing all sorts of things. But bottom line is that prior to that, you know it was a requirement. We had to push laws in this parliament. The FIFA Opportunity Act, I'm sure you remember it, which suspends our domestic law in favor of an international federation. We know the untold misery of that. You know it, honorable members. You know that in that law, there is no competitive bidding. They bring Match, a FIFA-owned company, there in Europe. It comes here. It runs everything from hospitality and what, and it collects all the money. But the country still has to pay for the shortfall and every other thing, and shares in no revenue. I mean, that scenario can't be an out call. and some, it must start somewhere. Perhaps we are the first ones to take this stance and to do that. But already countries like Russia, India, that was made to spend more money than it really needed to. The daily Commonwealth Games just before the Glasgow ones, you know the untold misery. Members of the media wrote striking articles about affordability and about all sorts of things. So I'm saying that those issues are also on the back of our minds, and governments must start taking a stance. That's important, particularly around this. More so when we know for sure that these games can be delivered for 4.32 billion. Why must we be forced to spend 8.5? So I think that is the context under which we are. But this international dimension that many other countries have now commended us for taking this stance, it is going to help more and more, and it will change the landscape of bidding in the future. Because the only thing people say they fear is the so-called embarrassment of saying that we didn't host. But we were prepared. I think we had politically prepared ourselves to say we can explain this to the South African society, and prudency can be. And I can sure bet you, if we had agreed to spend this 8.5 billion, I can only imagine the media articles that were going to be written about how irresponsible we are in a country where fees must fall is an issue, in a country where the competing priorities are there and so on, and we are forced to do this. But we must do what makes economic sense. And not to me, it makes quite good business sense that we spend about 5 billion and get 20 billion in return. You know, and in it, I don't want the so-called trickle-down economics. Let's look strictly at what just through taxation the National Revenue Fund will get back. And that was 5.6 billion. Just invest on everything that we tax coming in and customs, just that collection. We would have put 4.32 in reverse, we get 5.6 into directly into the national fiscal. Leave these other things that says other people will get jobs, and when they have jobs now, they pay as you earn, and there is indirect benefits that come to them. When those indirect benefits are calculated cumulatively plus the direct benefits, then you amount at about an economic impact of 20 billion. But strictly speaking, 5.6 for that. That's why it didn't make sense to us that we will outlay directly 8 billion or 8.5 just in operational expenditure before we even speak CAPEX for the athletes' village. And we only relay in direct revenue just 5.6 billion. It doesn't make sense. So for me, that doesn't make good economics because other benefits are intangible. But society is quick to only ask for the tangibles. It doesn't like this stretched idea of therefore that's the benefit, you know. They want to see the direct benefit. And I think that was the preoccupation we had. I can assure Honorable Bergman, I don't agree with this notion that says all these things are the same. And I think that's why we differentiated. In fact, I once had a similar debate with you on the sidelines of the committee. We debated this issue in all fairness about the differentiation of our bidding and hosting strategy. And I assured you then, and even I assured the committee that day, that we are no longer a vacuum cleaner, you know, that just sucks up everything that comes our way, and we just want to host for that one. I don't know how many of the people who come to us, the most recent one we have turned down is the Angling and Casting Federation. They want to host the World Cup here. They need, it's not a lot of money. They need about 16 million to host this thing. But honestly, between me and you, even with the 60 million, what you call the opportunity cost, it doesn't make sense. There's no economic benefit. It's just a few people who like fishing, and they're going to come and sit in some dam, and then they are contained in that resort. There's no economic impact. There's nothing. We just outlay expenditure for people to fish and throw the fish back. So that's the bottom line. And when that comes and we make an objective evaluation, we don't agree to host. Even if it is called a World Cup, we don't agree to host that World Cup. We decline it and we say, no, we will not accept it unless a different model is shown. You know, and we're shown other things that we don't see that we can consider in making the decision. But the return on investment, we insist on it. And the opportunity cost tells us that is it something, because sometimes we don't really buy the real tangible economic benefits. Sometimes we buy the marketing. And that's responsible tourism. It's for people to say, they know South Africa, they know Cape Town, they know Johannesburg, they know the premier destination, but do they know Durban? Not that much. But right now, I can tell you, even with all the negativity, how many people Google Durban and ask Repucom to share with you the data? How many people Google Durban just to see, they read an article that say Durban has been stripped the rights to host the Commonwealth Games, and they say, where is this Durban? And they start reading about it. But have you seen what we have done now with the website of Durban? We have turned the unfortunate thing into fortune. Because people now are visiting that website. The first thing now we have done, we have removed, visit that website today. We have removed the faces of the mayor, everybody. We have put tourism products right on the, when you land on that website to know what Durban is, just see what you look at there. And people get an idea that, no, but this is a brilliant city. And it starts communicating. And even our message about the compact games, we have left it on that website. Because the people who are now visiting it is because they want to see. But they see that this was a superior beat every other thing. And we clarify that. The only difference, what we do not have, is the money that we are being asked to pay. Because we know, but the benefits are there, tangible, even now, long after. So that's what we see. Will we therefore support the rugby thing? Let's wait for second week April when the minister releases the annual transformation barometer. Chances are that, I must not be told that I may still have the committee. Chances are that they may go through the cross line. And if they do, we will lift the suspension. And if the suspension is lifted, they are free to bid and to proceed with their bid. And I don't think that we will stand in their way. But let me say so, and let me correct one thing so that the committee and ourselves are also clear. While, yes, the Rugby World Cup and the Cricket World Cup are a better proposition economically compared to, say, Commonwealth Games or compared to FIFA World Cup and so on, but it is not true that we don't need money for them. We do. We are going to spend. If should cabinet approve that we are hosting the Rugby World Cup, we are going to have to spend. You say we have infrastructure already. Yes. But we are going to have to refurbish that infrastructure. It's not true that, you know, tourists will just come and then the games begin. No. We are going to have to refurbish the infrastructure to meet. By the way, World Rugby has now amended. I'm sure you know this. They last year amended their requirements for bidding. And so now you know they're doing the two-stage process. But other than that, look at their technical specifications. That's what I'm saying to you. You will see that we're going to have to refurbish the stadium involved. And then two, they will still need a guarantee from us. And funny enough, that guarantee is also in the region of 4.8 billion. It's the same thing. So it can't be right to say, and the economic benefits, by the way, in this case, according to their own study, rugby, it's about 20 billion. So it's more or less the same as the Commonwealth. So if Honorable Bergman supports the rugby bid, he should naturally be supporting the Commonwealth bid, because the two, you expand the same and give the same guarantee and get the same economic value back. So it's like for like. So typically, I will lobby you then. Should they cross the Rubicon, I will lobby you to support this. But in the same manner, I'll also ask you to retrospectively now support the Commonwealth bid, because it's like for like. You expend 4 billion and get 20 back for both. You know, so it's more or less the same thing. So I think that's where we are about it. And Chair, I think I've covered every other thing.
Thank you, DJ. I'm suspecting that. I'm suspecting. You're out of order, the whip. I'm still chairing the meeting. Why are you doing this? Disrespecting me now. When at home, sitting in Imbizo, where the elders are sitting, even in that meeting, there is somebody who's chairing the meeting. No one just raise or just speak. We are following what Honorable Mhlongo today done to me, and we are also a culprit. No. Sometimes honorable members don't want to behave, and I'm sitting here that what it happened in Northwest, you are thinking that it was right when a mayor of the place did not respect me. Please, Honorable the Whip. You know what I wanted to say, DJ? Sometimes we do raise political issues, and as an administrator, you do sit with the politicians because your principal is a politician. So you need to answer political because we have a political end. So as I'm sitting here, I'm suspecting every bit, it must have blessings from the cabinet, fortunately, where your political head is sitting. But after that, there's this somebody who can agree whether we do have this money or not, which is Minister of Finance. With me, whilst we don't have enough money at this committee, which is we've been crying, thinking that we can have an impact of one debating, wanting more money, because this is one department that when we want social cohesion, we need to have a bigger slice of budget, but it's not. And I'm suspecting that by that 180, to me, as individual member of this committee, you are supposed to go and bid. Irrespective of that, we don't have some other things which we need to have as a committee or as a department. I can tell you that we had a good meeting yesterday with a cricket, but I don't think that when we were asking them to do better assisting the department, I can agree that we're not supposed to do a beating, let alone that we're going to get more temporary jobs, we're going to get some revenues, but I'm 100% sure that any time as this member of this committee, when there's something that we need to bid for it, as this sport, as a member of committee and individual, I will support that, because the history of 2010 made us to be one South Africa. And as I'm speaking today, no one can say that we are still one South Africans. Sport sometimes need us mostly, especially in this era of that sometimes now what I'm seeing even in the committee, we're all proud of our political affiliation here in the committee. Used not to be like that, but I'm suspecting there's something made that today you must know that I'm ANC, I'm DA, I'm COPE, I'm whatever. We used to be a one family, but we cannot avoid in some other instances, I've seen it today, that everyone is proud of his or her party. And if we can continue doing that in both parties, especially DA and ANC, these are two parties and members of committee who has been one family, and they've been having one interest of social cohesion. Come this failure of the bid, today I'm seeing DA and ANC in this committee. I'm pleading that maybe today let's start afresh to be the members of this committee. Because I'm suspecting immediately that we're starting to do that, we'll be like we are in the plenary. In that plenary, we're doing what we can do in this committee that I've seen today. And this committee is very important, committee of sport. And we've been not having our clans, Iziduko. We've been members of this committee. I'm pleading both parties, ANC and DA, let's behave like committee members. Oh, but you know when somebody speaking, somebody raise hand, I had to stop because I'm thinking that we are interjecting or objecting. I'm noting you. So I'm saying, honorable members, I felt today that we are no longer that family. And I want that this board, in order that we must try to improve of former sport before unbending. We've been united wanting that the rural part of people, they must benefit. But saying so, even the urban ones, today I had a meeting of, as if I'm a speaker of parliament, that honorable members now, they are remembering their political parties. It's not nice. And we must not start in this committee. I will be pleading with the leaders of both parties, ANC and DA, that when we are engaging, when there is a problem, we cannot solve a problem by remembering who are we. Let's remember that we are the members of parliament who are supposed to be united in issues of the country. I'm pleading that what happened today, I don't want that it must happen again. Even on that third, that Honorable Mhlong is saying that still reserving some other things for third of May of Minister. Even on that day, you must behave like leaders of this committee, not leaders of your parties. There's a difference between a leader of your own party when you are talking about things of nationality, especially sport. I felt that, I did feel today that I'm having ANC and DA. I used not to have that. I was thinking that when I was taking the last intake, I'm trying to close this because I've cautioned Honorable Radhomo, who did hear something whilst he was outside. We're not going to repeat. We've heard what they are saying and we don't want you to respond because I'm the chair. I'm pleading to these two parties. Honorable Mhlong.
Chair, with your same spirit, I support you fully. But you must understand that we are doing our oversight work, both sides. I support you wholeheartedly. We've been a family. But if you don't understand why I must question the DG and then you interact with me instead of interacting with the DG, it becomes what you saw. And, Chair, last question that I wanted to ask in follow-up. The DG stated that my questions were totally out of what I was asking, just one of the questions that I've asked the minister when he's saying he's going to outsource the information. One of the questions, just I'll give you one, did you sign a financial guarantee with the CGF? That little question. You're supposed to say no, as you were stating it to us. I'm just making an example. It was not. It says, here's the response. The response says, we are sourcing out information from Durban, KwaZulu-Natal regarding a request made will be really available. I'm just saying, it's not about only finances. We wanted to understand the issues that you've raised today.
But I don't know whether we were outside, honorable members, who did you responded on your question. And I was thinking that he was trying to tell you why the minister responded like that. Honorable Lewin. Press your mic.
Because I thought that if I ask questions to the minister, it's between me and the minister. He's not part of the committee. Because I become lost if now we are engaging with questions that I did not ask or we did not ask in this committee. Because otherwise we will be in trouble because we also ask questions and we can end up talking in cross purposes. But for the sake of the committee, let's stick to what is happening in the committee and track what is happening in the committee. Because all of us, we ask different questions.
Honourable members, as members of parliament, we do have right to ask questions direct to the minister. And today, the minister is not here. And the honourable Mhlongo and the responses from UDG, it's some of questions UDG that he does have a knowledge, because from the office of Utabo, all those questions via that office. And that office send the questions to the DG, to the minister. So I'm saying, whilst I was thinking that DG responded, if Honorable Mhlongo is not happy about the responses, minister is going to come, but we're thinking that DG is supposed to know each and every question is getting to the minister because it's the DG. Sometimes the minister consult with him wanting information. So if until now what you have responded, Honorable Mhlongo is saying that what you have responded is what is not happy or not convinced that he was answered with due respect, honorable members. Minister is going to be asked on the 3rd. If he doesn't have any other commitment, he must come. But finally, we're promising that as from today, the office of the minister, which is with us today, they must try to open that dial, because I'm suspecting that that minister is capable of answering any question. It's either written or an oral question. So we are giving a committee surety that minister will come and ask and respond. Some other questions, they are not coming direct to us as committee members. That's why sometimes we are not even aware of these questions. There are those questions just going direct to minister and now emerge in a committee meeting when even himself is not here. But I was thinking that UDG has tried his best to answer. But with me as a chairperson, sometimes when I don't understand even if it's Honorable Raruhomo in the discussion, in order that I must channel a committee in a right direction. I'm suspecting I've got a right to ask, what are you talking about? What is it? So, because some of your questions, Honorable Mhlongo, whilst you have got a right, they didn't come to the committee, they did go straight to minister. And I was worried now, what is it? So, but to DG, he responded, but let's say that we are going to give an opportunity to a minister to further add. I'm coming to the end of this by saying that I've asked the management committee and coming and reported in the committee that in future we need to have some other entities when a department is here. I'm feeling very strongly that I've asked that USASCO today must be part of this meeting. Because why we are saying that we have a history of a department in USASCO not to talk same language. And when USASCO is here, will be telling us that a department didn't do ABC. When a department is saying, is here, he's saying, no, SASCO was told them ABC. I've seen the questions. There are questions which are related to SASCO. And the way that UDG responded, I don't know when, if they were with us, SASCO, how were they going to respond? So I'm emphasizing that with the staff that we have agreed that especially SAIDS, SASCOC and Boxing South Africa, especially with SASCOC that is part of this build, I wanted that they must be part of us today. Unfortunately, I don't know what happened because now there are questions and maybe we've seen them responding immediately in this 2022, and I've said immediately they must be part of us. And your questions, I do remember, your questions, they are directly saying that we have something informed about SASCOC's responses. So Usune is reminding me that Mr. Sam is out of country, that's why he is not here. So it's not a crime. So next time they will come together with this department. This is going to be second time that I'm seeing that maybe the right doesn't know what is the left hand side is doing. And if it's like that, in reality is that teaching, we can't have meeting with our department, especially relating to SASCOC issues. They must be with us. Honorable members, now,
can we invite them on the third? It's a proposal, Chair. Moving with the motion on that, the department and the minister will be here and then we'll take it from there.
Honorable members, can we pass on this discussion? I'm suspecting that the issue of SASCO is. Are you listening to me? I'm suspecting the question of SASCO. Honorable member, I've told you that Mr. Gideon Sam is out of country and I will start from there. Whether on that day are they not going to have a problem. But so far, the responses that have been given by UDG answered some other questions that were raised about SASCOP. Honorable members, can we go to 1B? DG?
Sorry, forgive me, Chair. The presentation will briefly cover the report as well as a little briefing on the Safety at Sport and Recreation Events Act and the constitution of the appeal board thereto. The Chair would recall that this matter has long coming. Since the adoption of the SASREA, or the Safety at Sport and Recreation Events Act, this act was promulgated and came about as a result of the then Ellis Park disaster. I'm sure you'd recall what happened there, and in order to strengthen the arms in as far as what the state does to limit potential disaster at this. That law itself, as you know, Chair, gives the police, the subs, the right to make determinations and to also classify events. There are ratings that are given when an event is to take place. The Act requires those who organize these events to also appoint safety officers, and the safety officers then prepare the security and safety plan for the event, and after which all of that is submitted before the police to make a determination on the level of risk pertaining to this event. In the event of somebody or the event organizer submitting a risk rating to the police and the police giving high risk or otherwise, and that safety officer or the event organizer is unhappy with the level of rating, and there will be reasons why. Let me give an example. A category one event is a low risk event, which means that the requirements of what you need to put in and the number of security personnel and the things you need to have at that event are quite lesser as compared to a categorized level five event, which is a high risk event. So in a high risk event, regulations to this act starts prescribing certain things. The number of marshals you must have vis-a-vis the number of participants. It starts prescribing the number of security officials you must have, the number of exits you must have, the number of all those things come into being, but with them comes the issue of cost. So you'd recall that originally we had given an exemption to local and community-based events which attracts 2,000 or less participants, that they are exempted from the law. But you'll also be fully aware that events that captures 2,000 or more participants have to apply for such categorization. But it differentiates and makes it more expensive for events that have much more or a higher degree of risk. The cost of organizing that event becomes summarily high. So right now, up until now, there was no appeal process. A person who was dissatisfied with the categorization by police couldn't have that administrative decision be placed on review. The only remedy they had had up until now was a remedy available in terms of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, which says that a higher authority can review a decision of a lower authority. So within that context, that's the mechanism that has been applied up to now. But the law had provided for the establishment of an appeals board, which can consider appeals by police decisions as they have been made by events organizers. And the board was not in place. Originally, the minister, the act has not been drafted quite clear. The act simply says that the minister, on the advice of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, relevant Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, which means this one, can appoint an appeals board. Now, it doesn't say and prescribe the manner of appointment, save for the fact that it has to be via the advice of this body. So the minister then ran the process, advertised, called for people to be nominated, the public nominated, and he shortlisted people, and then he brought the shortlist plus the long list and to this committee to say, EADs, would you advise me on who to appoint? And the portfolio committee deliberated on the matter, felt that they were not happy with the process the minister had followed, that their understanding was that the portfolio committee or parliament must rather call for the nominations and interview, and only after then recommend to the minister. And this was taken, we had about three legal opinions on it. The state law advisors said what we did was nothing wrong, because the manner of appointment was not prescribed in terms of the law, and the minister could determine regulations on how to do this. And the parliamentary legal services advised the committee that no, as is the case with all other similar clauses, where like SABC board, where parliament does the thing and only after then recommend to the president to say appoint. In this case, similar approach should have been followed and so on. So we had these two conflicting legal opinions. We got an independent one which said that either way, it's okay, you know. So in which case the minister felt politically that this is not an issue he needs to be fighting with the committee on or parliament over, and he deferred to parliament to say, all right, you can run the process and then advise. So since then, parliament recommended the people to be appointed. This portfolio committee recommended the people, and the minister has since appointed those people. We have constituted this, we have trained them, they are okay, they have been inducted. So the one thing that is now remaining is the determination of how they are paid. I'm sure you are familiar with the prescripts of the law, and a body of this nature, a committee of experts, they are published rates that the Treasury publishes on an annual basis on how committees of this nature needs to be remunerated. But after we communicated with members of this committee that this is what we will be paying them on the Treasury rates, they met and their chairperson wrote a representation on their behalf to ask that, because many of them come from the legal profession and they are them sacrificing the day's work, it means they forfeit so much money in favor of what they considered really too little money that was to be paid to them in terms of the Treasury rates. That requested a bit more higher and a review and a bit more consideration be given. We have since forwarded the request to the Treasury. There is a committee of the Treasury that has been set up now, appointed by the DG in the Treasury, where our people in the department, the representatives of the DG of DPSA, the representatives of the DG in the Treasury, and the Public Service Commission would sit with a view of considering a review of the rates as given. Once this committee has finalized its issues and has determined the value and how much we need to pay these committee members on, then we will submit for both the Minister of Sport, who is the person appointing, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance on the approved remuneration scales. And then the committee can then commence with his duties. Right now, we aren't under pressure. We're doing this and we're following the letter of the law properly, largely because there is no appeal pending and no one has appealed. In fact, ever since the law was promulgated, there has never been a single appeal lodged. You know, so whatever police determine and categorize, event organizers have been accepting and dealing with, and which is a great thing because it shows that the police means they are paying attention and that they are following the regulations properly. So as it is, we need, however, this review mechanism. It would have been unforgivable that somebody then appeals and the event can't go on because there is a dispute, and the dispute can be resolved because the minister had failed to fulfill its legal obligation of putting in place an appeal board. So the appeal board will be set up. It will be in office, although we suspect that it is going to complete its office and its term without ever having considered a single appeal. So it's a possibility, but we will pay them as and when they sit for an appeal. So that's how, where we are, and that's the procedure we have since followed ever since the committee recommended to the minister. And this is where we are, but there is no appeal. We have put mechanisms for appeal in place, including all the forms that are necessary for a person who wants to appeal to fill. So from the state of readiness, we are ready should an appeal be lodged. And we will be ready to hear the appeal and to listen to it, and the appeal body will then come back and report to us. So I think that's the long and short of the process, how far we have gone. Thank you.
It's only Batman. Okay, I'll come after Batman.
Chair, thanks very much. Just from the DG, just to find out, when will we get sight of the actual amendments to these, to all three, is it three or four? Of seven, eight, nine, ten, to the 10 amendments of legislation.
I wanted to find out, you gave us a picture that the legal advisor said it's fine for the board. What is the feeling of us as a committee? Because there are two options that you gave us. Now, another question that I wanted to find, the composition there of, and the terms of office, how many I needed that I didn't see really here. And can you have their names if they are already being appointed, as per, if I understood you well, Chair? And then what is the treasury rates? Can you have a figure per member? What is the treasury rate? Because you told us that they want more than the banks. Last question, Chair. I'm not sure. I need your guidance. When does the public participation comes in? After or after this? So it happened after.
Out, but Mpumzi is reminding me that as this committee we've done interviews and the names were the proposal of the names and they were adopted and signed by the minister. So we even given all the names, who's chairing, who's the deputy. So we have, because we took some days doing interviews, but DG will respond. But as a committee, we have all that information.
Chair, thank you. No, Honourable Bergman, I believe in terms of the agenda, we are still at 1B. So it only covered the SASRI appeals board report and briefly. In 1C, I will make a presentation on all the legislative issues. Then, Honorable Ralokhoma, we believe that we did when the law was published. All stakeholders of sports were involved in the popularization of what the law say. And that's why all of them, without fail, they know it's illegal to host an event with 2,000 participants or more without applying for categorization. They know that. But also on the forms that we designed for the police, they are now on letterheads of SAPS, but they were designed by our department to help SAPS when we were doing the bilateral exchanges on preparing for the implementation of the law. The clause there, when the categorization slip, which is number C, an extra C, when it's signed by the police and stamped and they give you categorization, at the bottom there, it indicates that if you are unhappy about this categorization, you can appeal, you can lodge an appeal. And then previously, it was saying with the legal services of our department. We have now made that legal services of our department is the recipient, is the depository for appeals. And when it has appeals, it notifies the appeal board and constitute the meeting, and the appeal board sits to consider the appeals. Perhaps we can do a bit more by popularizing the members of the appeal board, but that there is a mechanism for an appeal. I think all federations, largely because in our country, majority of events, sport events, are organized by sport federations, except for a few who are private sector companies owning specific sport properties. But they too are fully aware about the provisions of the law and the provisions for an appeal process. And that is why I'm saying that previously they had used BAJA to inquire with us about certain things because they were fully familiar with the provisions. But yes, I think there is room for us to do a bit more. SASRIA is not one of the law we run like campaigns or thing around and so on. Because ever since the Ellis Park disaster, I'm sure you know that the next worst thing, well, two things, and I think on both occasions Orlando Pirates, you know, that has been the issue. First, Orlando Pirates supporters at FNB bent some chairs. You remember the story. They bent some chairs angry after the SASRIA was in place. And secondly, now recently, they jumped onto the field and every other thing after. These are the only two direct violations of major events that were categorized, which came into being, and we're attending with them according to the procedures in the law. The law designates the Director General of Sport as the person responsible for enforcement once this has happened. And in both instances, like in this one, the most recent one, I had duly wrote to the police to constitute the review committee, which is doing. PSL itself has also done its own review, because the idea is then to look at what appropriate remedial measures are taken against those. If we impose penalties, we do so. If we do that, we do that. But the legal framework is in place to look at all of that. But we aren't running really serious campaigns on the basis that after we did roadshows, provincial roadshows with everybody and met with stakeholders to popularize the new law, we take it now. It's fully embedded. The people in sports sector are fully clear about what they need to do when they are hosting an event, and they know the requirements of the law. But yeah, I agree. We can popularize some of the members that people know that they are there, who's the chair, and so on. But committees of this nature, I can assure you, Honorable Rarukuma, they only become popular when they are listening to an appeal, and an appeal makes sense. You know, if somebody has appealed, has said, I'm not happy with being categorized high-risk event, I actually believe my event is medium risk, and they start giving their reasons, and this body sits there, and the police come to testify why they are categorizing it high-risk, and he argues that, and there's that. If it's a high-profile case, perhaps involving maybe a big federation, SARU, or whatever, media is bound to notice, and that's when people really start paying attention. Competition Commission has been hitting people very hard. The first time it really became popular was when it was investigating the bread cartel. And it's only because all of us eat bread, and so we took interest in, and it was reported every day in the media about what they were doing. Then the next big case was the 2010 FIFA World Cup, their collusion on the stadium. Now recently is the banks. So you can see as and when it can subside for 2 years without anybody even having forgotten that we have a competition commission. But when it comes back, and it listens to cases every day, but when there is one high profile case, that's when everybody, now all of a sudden, Tembingo Sibonakele is on the front pages of Image magazine, is that it has become popular because it's dealing with high profile cases. And that's what normally popularizes boards and committees of this nature. So you can't just popularize it artificially and start running big newspaper adverts and full page and saying, we have a board, you know, did you know you can appeal to this board? Here's the chair. The cost of expending that money vis-a-vis really the benefit, particularly when you are not likely to have any appeal in the next 3 months or whatever, just doesn't cut it and make it right. So I think that's where we are, but we can do a bit more. For instance, we can put them on the website and do all of that, and we can also do collateral for them perhaps to popularize them. But yeah, it's something we will look into, Chair, and see how we actualize what the committee say. Honorable Mkongo, I think the Chair has covered a bit of this. I think you went out when I spoke about the third option. So, first, the parliamentary one was in the parliament. What the committee is saying is proper. State law advisors were saying the minister is also right in what he's doing, and we had two conflicting things. We got an independent thing. We government paid for an independent opinion. That opinion said both these opinions are not wrong. They are necessarily right. It was written by Norman Arense, SC. He said that what the parliamentary committee is saying, that could be well the process that needs to be followed, because the law is not clear. It doesn't prohibit what the committee is saying. Equally, what the ministry is saying or what it has done, there's nothing wrong in terms of the current provisions of the law from that being happened. And he said convention must be built and established and be laid to rest so that it creates precedence of how this thing is done. So when you left, when you went outside, I said, minister then said, no, this is not an issue he wants to take up a fight with the committee on. and immediately defer to the committee to say, can you run the process according to what Parliament say you must do, and run it that way, and you'll then advise me thereafter. And this committee did exactly that, ran the interviews. We have not changed any of the single names, including the designation for chair and deputy chair, than what the committee has done. And after Minister appointed, Minister Julie wrote to the Speaker and also copied the chair of the committee to say, I have accepted your recommendations of Parliament and I have appointed these people, the names you say you require. We have, unfortunately, I think because you are disadvantaged by being new in the committee, but that is what transpired, and we can share the names again with yourself in that regard. The treasury rates, I was still trying to Google quickly what rates are here. I can't recall them off the top, but they are available. DPSA as well as the treasury are published on their website annually, and they are gazetted. And I can undertake that we will send to the secretariat of the committee the rates immediately when we get back to Pretoria. But they are there. I think they differ, by the way. I must forewarn you, they differ. There is rates published for committees of inquiry as appointed by the president, which must be paid. There is committees of experts. There is also so-called interlocutor committees, which are advisory committees of panels that are set. So they are in different categories, and they also go according to rates. What DPSA has further done is to determine for certain levels of committees, including this one, is to look, those committees are not committees that are paid uniformly, meaning that simply by virtue of being a member of the committee, it's not guaranteed you are going to get the same amount of money. So in that case, they collect CVs of everybody, and they ask them to put up motivations and all of that, and they consider that duly. So according to your own degree of experience, your qualifications, your exposure, every other thing, determines on that grading where you are and how much you earn. But what those rates, published rates do, they set parameters on the sidelines. So the key thing for us was whether this committee must be classified as a committee of experts, in which case rates are the same for everybody, or it must be this differentiated committee. That decision is still to be made by the Treasury with DPSA and ourselves and Public Service Commission. And then once we have made that determination, we'll also, because if it is made that way, then we'll say, of these three scales, is it an A, a B, or a C? And then that's quick. That one in an hour could have been done. But if it is to be a differentiated committee, then you can imagine it's going to drag. We're going to have to now ask these people to say, send us your CVs, and everybody's going to be paid according to their own worth. And then, which means that individually, each and every one of them can then appeal and say, but I think in my issue you have forgotten that I also travel overseas and this, that, or whatever the reasons they may forward and give as an issue. But I guess that's the story. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DC. Honourable members, can you grab something? Or can we have lunch, not grab? Let's have a lunch to cool down and come back. Lunch has been served outside. Let's come back at 2:45. Is it too much or is it enough?
No PowerPoints anywhere, no?
Sorry?
There are no PowerPoints anywhere.
Oh, last one.
No.
To charge.
Oh,
no power. Okay, no.
No PowerPoints.
I thought you'd say PowerPoint.
Presentation, no.
I'm thinking a lot. Oh, no. Not in this building.
Quite a few.
Not in this building.
I wonder why they don't.
I don't know.
Update it.
There's usually one over there, but you need to have like a plug.
Very strange.